across the UK, online and on DAB.
This is Talk Radio.
Evening all, how are we? Thank you very much indeed for your company. It's Christo here on Talk Radio with your late night show with you till 1 o'clock. Lots we're going to be discussing between now and then. You're welcome to join the conversation, 0344 499 1000. Coming up a little later, we'll be talking about whether you've ever been in the situation where you've had to confront someone, either in the theatre or in a cinema, and the annoying behaviour of those people that don't follow the unspoken rules in those places. Or some of the rules are actually laid out, like, you know, your mobile phone. Or the other thing is eating. I know Penny Smith, I talked to Penny Smith about this at weekends, because you normally find me on Talk Radio at weekends, and many a time we've spoken about how it's pretty unbelievable that, you know, look, I like a meal or two or three, you know, I am a fat man, but I can go 2 hours without having to eat stuff. Okay, it's very rare. But, you know, these people, they have to snack while they're in the theatre. You know, there's a really, really beautiful tense scene in a stage show, and then you hear them opening a bag of Maltesers. No, you can really wait for those Maltesers. So we'll talk about that between now and 1 o'clock. In an hour's time, I think something that will get you hot under the collar, Uber. Now, something that went under the radar in the last few days. You might have noticed there's a few things been happening in the news. A little bit of an election. Just a bit of one. And Uber have actually appealed losing their license here in London. Now, you might think that's a bit of a London-centric story, but of course, across the UK, this is going to be relevant because it could see a knock-on effect across other cities. And we'll be discussing between now and 1 o'clock whether Uber's appeal should or shouldn't be successful when it comes to losing their operating license in London. But I want to start off by talking to you about a story that, again, you know, there have been lots of stories under the radar the last couple of weeks. And I want to talk to you about a lady by the name of Amy Dallamura. Now, Amy Dallamura, 56-year-old lady, was found guilty last month after a trial of repeatedly targeting the ex-Independent Group for Change MP, Anna Soubry. Now, you might remember there were a few interviews that Anna Soubry did, and during those interviews, there was sometimes an activist, a lady on the side of those interviews, shouting abuse at Anna Soubry. Well, what you might not have realised when you heard that lady shouting abuse is that there were actually multiple instances where she did so. She was a Brexit activist. She actually ended up standing in the same constituency as Anna Soubry, and it was an English Democrat. It was an English Democrat candidate she was in Broxtow. But she'd actually harassed Anna Soubry a number of times. And last month, she was found guilty of harassment. Now, as a result of her being found guilty, she was banned from campaigning in Broxtow, in the constituency in which she was standing for the English Democrats against Anna Soubry. And she was also banned from contacting or mentioning Anna Soubry on social media. It was between January and March this year that she turned up at many events that Anna Soubry was at. And I think the crescendo of this was when she called Anna Soubry a traitor on live television. Now, you'll know why she thought Anna Soubry was a traitor, because obviously Anna Soubry was part of the Independent Group. She defected from the Tories. She was one of the people in Parliament who was most vehemently against the form of Brexit that we were going to be getting. And at one point, remember, no deal was very much on the agenda. Anna Soubry was one of the most vocal MPs against no deal. There was another incident where she was called traitor. She was also another incident where she was approaching Anna Soubry, and Anna Soubry said she was left frightened following some of these incidents, though Dallamura didn't accept this and claimed her behaviour was politically motivated. Well, Shall we hear some of what she was doing when Anna Soubry was being interviewed? So I think we've got the audio here of Anna Soubry being spoken, speaking on Newsnight whilst being interviewed. And the voice you will hear in the background is that of Amy Dallaire-Mura.
Half the Conservative Parliamentary Party actually voted against...
Anna Soubry to trade as are 312... Don't touch me. Do not touch. You're speaking in a democracy.
Sorry,
you need to get the lead, Anna Soubry. Get her to the lead. Use your position.
Don't touch me.
The lead.
Do not touch me.
Get the lead.
Half the Conservative Parliamentary Party actually voted against...
Anna Soubry to trade as are 312... Do not touch.
You're speaking in a democracy.
Sorry,
get the lead, Anna Soubry.
Get her to the lead.
Actually, use your position.
Don't touch me.
The lead.
Do not touch.
Get the lead.
So you can hear her in the background saying, don't touch me, and all these things after she had been shouting the words traitor at Anna Soubry. 0344 499 1000. I'd like to know from you, firstly, what do you think of the fact that she's not only been found guilty, but she's now been sentenced? That's what took place today, the sentencing. And I think it was 28 days. I'm just looking it up now. Yes, she was guilty of harassing the MP, and she was jailed for 28 days with a minimum of 14 days, meaning that she will be behind bars for Christmas. I'd like to know whether you agree with that, whether you think that shouting abuse at an MP, whether repeatedly hassling an MP, whether that's an acceptable part of the discourse of being an MP, and to what extent is it acceptable to criticise, harangue, scream abuse at an MP? Where does the free speech for that end and harassment begin? Clearly the court in this case thought it was harassment. I know that there are some investigations being done into the mental health of Ms. Dallaire-Mura, and that's something that we obviously should acknowledge when it comes to this. But I really want to know from you whether you support the fact that she has been jailed for this. I think it's fair to say if she's been spending a lot of time approaching Ms. Soubry, constantly screaming abuse at Ms. Soubry, then I think it's probably fair enough that it's harassment. Clearly the court agreed it was harassment. But do you think it's fair enough that she should be jailed for that? A couple of people on Twitter contacted me today saying that they actually really wanted to talk about this because they don't feel it's fair that she's going to be spending Christmas in prison as a result of what they see as holding an MP to account. I think, unfortunately, if you are going to harass someone like that, well, that's what's going to happen. 0344 499 1000 is the number to call. The chief magistrate said that she showed an obsession and fixation with the politician. 0344 499 1000. She shouted, democracy is dead and shame on you, as she was sentenced today. But the magistrate said, that was in charge at the time, said ever since the murder of Joe Cox, MPs no longer feel able to put up with sustained intimidation. This damages our democracy because who wants to put up with this sort of harassment? She also said the bullying and intimidation that Ms. Dallaire-Mura used could stop ordinary, decent people becoming MPs. So where do you stand on that? 0344 499 1000 is the number to call. Don't forget as well, you can tweet me, Christo_radio. You can tweet Talk Radio directly, at Talk Radio. Really want to know whether you think it's reasonable to hold MPs to account in that way. And of course, this isn't the only way in which people have been abusing others. We're digging out the audio at the moment because it's quite difficult to edit, I'll be honest with you. There was another incident of this as well, which was utterly shameful. I don't know if you saw the video that was going around Facebook. and I think it was staggeringly of a junior doctor calling for the death of Boris Johnson after his election victory. Now, love or loathe Boris Johnson, and love or loathe where we are in our political system, he won. He won by an overwhelming majority. Did he win honestly? Probably not. Did he win telling the truth all the time? Probably not. Did the adverts that he told on Facebook or anything that come out of his mouth remotely true? Probably not. However, we are where we are. He won the election, and it's frankly outrageous to call for his death, really. I mean, that's incitement to violence, isn't it, if you're doing it on camera? However, is it in the same category as repeatedly harassing someone? Probably not. So, whilst I find it repugnant, I don't think that that woman should be jailed for such horrible words until it actually becomes harassment. And when it does, then fair enough. But maybe you think there's a double standard happening here. Maybe you think that it is free speech to hassle MPs in that way. 0344 499 1000 is the number to call. Like I said, coming up later, we're going to be talking about Uber and whether they really still have a role to play in getting around our cities, or whether the safety concerns, whether the terrible, terrible driving concerns as well that we have in our cities of Uber, which, you know, frankly, I just wonder sometimes whether half the drivers are blindfolded and the other half haven't got licenses. And I know that it's probably extreme to say that, but sometimes they are absolutely appalling. Though sometimes they're amazing as well. And the fact that they've given us some choice in our cities is a really good thing. But we'll explore that after 11 o'clock. 0344 499 1000 is the number to call. To what extent do you think that it's fair to hold politicians to account, to shout at them, to call them traitors? I mean, we saw it, didn't we? We saw it when Anna Soubry was walking past the House of Commons one day as well, where some rather intimidating guy sort of got up next to her and started calling her a traitor. And yeah, I don't think that's pleasant for a woman on her own in any circumstance. And you do have to put it in the context of the death of an MP. I don't care what side that MP was on. I don't care what side of the argument that MP was on. An MP was killed in recent years. I mean, that is staggering, if you ask me. And so I'm not surprised some of them are saying, you know what, enough is enough. I'm not surprised Anna Soubry, you know, love or loathe Anna Soubry, I'm not surprised she's saying enough is enough. 0344 499 1000 is the number to call. We will come back with some of your calls on this, and we're also going to be coming up after the break. We're going to actually be talking to the English Democrats. Now, they were actually part of the group that this lady was standing for in the election in this year, and of course she was banned from campaigning in Broxtow, but she was part of the English Democrats. It'll be very interesting to hear their take on this and much more of your calls. That's all coming up here on Talk Radio.
Supercharged current affairs debate and electrifying opinion. This is Talk Radio.
Good evening, Christo here on Talk Radio, and lots we've been discussing tonight with your late night show, with you till 1 o'clock. Lots on the menu, including later on we'll be talking about Uber, and whether you love or loathe them, whether you think their appeal is valid. This hour we're talking about the Brexiter who was found guilty of harassing the leading Remainer, Anna Soubry. She stood against her in the general election. Her name is Amy Dalla Mura, targeted Miss Soubry between January and March this year. Now, we're talking about this, but coming up later this hour, we might talk as well, not only about the divisions, but maybe how we can bring everyone together as well. So that is all coming up here on Talk Radio. But we've been talking about Amy Dalla Mura, the fact that she's now been sentenced to, well, a minimum of 14 days in jail, so definitely should be spending Christmas behind bars. It was a 28-day sentence, and the magistrate has also asked for a psychiatric report on her. This is because of the number of times that she approached Anna Soubry, and apparently the magistrate described her behaviour as oppressive, and unacceptable and said that her conduct was driven by anger at her political views on Brexit and that she had caused harassment in the sense of alarm and distress. She refused to give her name and address when she was asked in court. She was ordered to stay away from the Broxton constituency as a condition of her bail, and she was told she must conduct her election campaign because she stood for the English Democrats against Anna Soubry in the Broxton constituency. She was told that she couldn't enter the Broxton constituency in order to carry out her electioneering, and that she had to do that either online or outside of Broxton. Let's now cross live to Robin Tilbrook, the chairman of the English Democrats, to find out his opinion on this story. Evening to you, Robin.
Evening, Christo.
Thanks for taking the time to talk to us this evening Talk Radio. Presumably you must be quite relieved that this lady has actually been found to have committed a crime, because I suppose it would disassociate itself from the English Democrats.
Relieved that she's found committed a crime. It's a perfect outrage that somebody who has, after all, done almost nothing of any significance should be found to be guilty of some sort of crime. What we're talking about here is a situation where a woman has called out whilst Anna Soubry was being interviewed by Newsnight that she said that Anna Soubry is a traitor.
Mm-hmm.
An opinion that a great many other people in the country would agree with. After all, that's pretty much all she's done. And yet she's wound up being sentenced to 28 days in prison, including being in prison during Christmas. It's completely outrageous behaviour by the courts and the system. And it shows that we no longer live in a properly democratic country.
She approached Anna Soubry on numerous occasions.
It wasn't just once or twice. It was numerous occasions between January and March. There were.
So you're suggesting that the magistrate isn't telling the truth?
There were two occasions when she approached her, and she didn't really approach her as such. I mean, well, one occasion she's calling out from in the central lobby in the House of Parliament whilst there's an interview going on. This is Anna Soubry, after all, who has described many leavers as being Nazis, and yet when somebody responds to her calling her a traitor, her response to that was to call for the police to get involved. Anna Soubry is one of those people who is a total hypocrite about these type of things.
So do you believe that the magistrate isn't telling the truth when she said that it was multiple times?
The magistrate didn't say it was multiple times. That's not an accurate report.
There were two occasions where
Amy got involved with Anna Soubry, and the second occasion was Remainer rally in which she heckled Anna Soubry.
She called Anna Soubry a traitor live on air. Anna Soubry actually said that she felt scared as a result of what her actions were.
I mean, Anna Soubry said that, yes.
Do you really want that? Do you really want the English Democrats to be making MPs scared? I totally get it. You want your voice heard. You think that certain MPs
I don't believe that Anna Soubry was at any stage scared.
I mean, the chief magistrate said that Dalimura showed an obsession and fixation with Anna Soubry, and that's why she was found guilty of harassment.
We fully intend to appeal against this. I mean, it seems to me to be a completely outrageous statement by the magistrate. I think she's gone completely off the scale in terms of what's sensible for a magistrate to say. There were two occasions in which this lady,
one of which she had to be escorted
from which this lady challenged Soubry. On neither occasion was there any offer of any. There wasn't even swearing, let alone any behaviour that could be characterised in any way as anything to do with violence or anything else. It was completely normal sort of thing that you would expect somebody to do in terms of electioneering. If Amy had been saying something from the Remain side, it would have been completely acceptable as far as this magistrate is concerned.
So the magistrate is
biased. What we wound up with is a situation where if you're a leaver, you wind up getting accused of this type of crime, whereas if you were a Remain, you'd be perfectly all right.
So you do think the magistrate showed bias?
Totally.
Well, that's an outrageous thing to suggest. You actually think the court is biased?
I think the
do you think that goes beyond just this magistrate, or do you think the judiciary is biased?
The judge in question, after all, is the one who sent Viscount St David's to prison for making a statement on a private Facebook chat site in which he criticised Gina Miller for her approach.
So you don't think the fact that she needed to actually be escorted from an event where Ms. Subaru was speaking, repeatedly interrupting her and trying to live stream the event on Facebook, as well as...
No, she did live stream it.
Yes.
It's all out there. People can see it. There is no way that what she did was the sort of behaviour that should wind up with somebody going to prison. It's completely outrageous and it's disgusting.
So you don't believe that and calling someone a traitor during a live television interview, meaning that actually Anna Subaru was asking for the police to be called, you don't think that that's enough for a magistrate to say, you know what, that is harassment? And you think the magistrate is biased?
I think we ought to consider the meaning of the word traitor. A traitor is a person who betrays someone or something, such as a friend, cause, or principle. Anna Subaru is a traitor.
Well, what happened to decency? What happened to manners? Why can't you just do that in a nice way? Why do you have to shout while she's doing an interview on television? Why can't you just put your point across? Why can't you write to her? Why can't you email her and tell her think she's a traitor? Why do you need to do it in that way?
Television and radio programs have mostly been remain dominated.
They have not, have you listened to this radio station?
They have not given a full voice to the leave side. And
You're talking rubbish. Nigel Farage has appeared on Question Time more than any other guest. Most of our media is actually leave-leaning. I think I can think of two newspapers, perhaps a third one, that aren't leave-leaning.
What's happened is, since the vote, the media switched from what they thought before, that they thought that people who were supporting leave were sort of curious eccentrics. And since the vote to leave, the media have tended to think that, in fact, that people who support leave are dangerous and should be kept off the media,
so,
and their
give me
voice
some
not
examples.
Properly represented.
Because, like I said, Nigel Farage has been on Question Time more than
not
any other guest.
The referendum.
No, but there have been many, many, many other Brexit Party guests, UKIP guests,
regularly. When, if you're talking Question Time, what's normally happened is there's been one representative out of four who's been for leave. The others have all been for remain. And in other words, it's completely contrary to what the actual opinion in the country.
So you think that our broadcast media is biased towards remain, and you think that the judiciary are part of that in the way in which they've convicted this lady?
Yes.
How can you possibly call yourself an English Democrat if you don't believe that the judiciary is independent and impartial?
The judiciary are appointed by the Judicial Appointments Commission, which was a body that was created by Blair, and which has, as part of its requirements for the appointment to the judiciary, the requirement that you prove that you have a lifetime's commitment to equality and diversity. In other words, you are talking about people who are appointed on the basis that they are political activists for multiculturalism.
Why is equality and diversity something that you see as a political stance? I just see that
equality
as
diversity is a political stance.
Common sense.
It is official shorthand for multiculturalism.
So what, you would rather people not advocate equality?
No, what I'd rather is that we appointed people because they were good at the job, rather than because they were political activists.
No, because I would like a judge to think that everyone is equal.
That's not the entire point.
Everyone is equal.
Equality and diversity isn't about equality, contrary to what it sounds. It is a way of talking about something that are mutually inconsistent concepts. In terms of English language, but they are actually intended to be a way of talking about multiculturalism, which is, after all, a political agenda.
In what way is multiculturalism a political agenda in the context of the judiciary?
What multiculturalism says is that all cultures are equal. And so here in England, English culture is no more to be regarded than any culture.
Well, in the eyes of the law, I'm not talking about day-to-day, in the eyes of the law, if someone is stood in front of you and you are accused of a crime, then surely everyone is equal in the eyes of the law.
That's not the way
you're advocating certain cultures not being equal in the eyes of the law.
That's not the way the court has approached this. The way the court has approached this is that they have looked at the whole politics behind this, and they have looked at the fact that Amy was campaigning for Brexit and for Leave, and they've not liked that because they're Remainers.
Then tell me, why on earth would you want to leave the European Union and put all of our power in the hands of the UK court and UK Parliament if you believe that they're so biased?
Well, personally, I was one of those that have campaigned for Leave.
Right.
But I've campaigned for Leave because not because I think that the courts are sovereign or whatever, but because I think the English nation is sovereign. And I want the English nation to be sovereign, and I want us to reassert control over what should happen in our country.
And how would they do that if it wasn't through the judiciary and through the courts and through the legal process of our parliament?
We need to stop appointing people simply because they're multiculturalists. We need to appoint people because they're good at the job rather than because they're multiculturalists.
You do understand that parliament make the laws that the judiciary uphold. So why on earth would you want laws made by parliament in a country and in a process that you believe is biased?
One of the things that we're intending to do to help Amy and to respond to this outrageous assault on freedom of speech is to appeal to the High Court through the judicial review process to get a ruling on the meaning of harassment.
How do you know the High Court isn't biased? How do you know the High Court isn't biased?
Well, they may be, but we'll take it through the system.
So if they don't come down on your side, they're biased, and if they do, then they're perfectly balanced in your eyes.
Well, I haven't said that.
Well, I've got a feeling that's what would be the outcome.
No.
Well, how do you know the High Court aren't biased now, then? Why do you need to know the results to know whether the High Court are biased if it's not going to be effective?
It's not a question of the High Court being biased or unbiased. What we're talking about is the appointment to the judiciary.
You're talking about magistrates being biased, and you came to that conclusion after they came to this conclusion because you claim that it's because she was against a Remainer. So why do you need to wait?
She has repeatedly proved herself to be so.
Why do you have to wait for the result of the High Court before you can tell me now whether you believe they're biased?
What I'm trying to explain to you is that there are basically two appeals from where Amy's got to at the moment.
Yeah.
One of which is an appeal against conviction. We will pursue that. That is the normal appeal. Obviously we'll... if it reaches the right result, it will result in Amy being acquitted.
And then you'll believe that they're not biased.
The second approach is that we will be making an application for judicial review to the High Court in order to get a ruling that the way that the magistrate approached this was completely wrong. It is not a proper case for harassment. She should never have been convicted. And it's completely wrong and not lawful for the decision to have been made in the way that it has.
It just seems so bizarre that you want to go through these processes of different areas of the judiciary that you were telling me were biased 2 minutes ago. I mean, I don't understand what the criteria is for bias if you're continuing
You asked me about the appointment system.
No, I asked you about the judiciary in general, actually, about the Supreme Court, about this High Court, about all of it. I mean, which bits are biased and which bits aren't then?
Well, certainly what Lord Irvine said, who was, after all, Mayor Blair's Lord Chancellor, he said he was setting up a system that was, as he put it in a speech, he said he was setting up this system to ensure that nobody with reactionary views could be appointed or promoted to the bench.
So again, we're back to equality and sort of people
In other words, the appointment system for the judiciary for the last... nearly 20 years, has been political.
But if someone was against multiculturalism, which is the criteria that you think makes them biased, then how could it be assumed that anyone would get a fair trial if they were from a different culture?
You
said that one of the reasons why you believe that some of the people in the judiciary who were appointed by the criteria of Blair, they're in favour of equality and multiculturalism.
But you have to demonstrate a lifetime's commitment.
But if they were against those things, then how would it be that anyone could ever get a fair trial if they were of a different culture? There would constantly be accusations of bias.
But the whole point of the way that the court ought to operate is to apply our law. It shouldn't be applying any other approach. It should be our law and nothing else.
But the law needs to be applied equally to everyone, and it sounds like
always been applied equally, but this is not what equality and diversity is about. Equality and diversity is not about the equal application of the law. It is about special treatment and special rights for particular groups.
So have there been any other examples of that have annoyed you?
I'm sorry?
Have there ever been any other examples of where you can tell me that the law has not been applied properly because of the need for equality and diversity?
Well, but the point that the system is currently applying isn't about the need for equality and diversity. What it is openly and deliberately biased in order to create a political environment.
So can you give me some examples? If it's something that you feel passionately about that isn't being applied, and this equality and diversity is being sort of foisted on people in the decisions being made by the judiciary, can you give me some examples of when that's actually happened, of cases that have been tried? Aside from this one, which I get your objection to, have there been any other cases where you can point to and say, yeah, that's one of the cases where this equality and diversity requirement has led to a conviction that was wrong?
I wasn't invited on to talk about all sorts of hypothetical or other cases.
Well, I'm not asking you for something hypothetical.
Talk about what happened with Amy's case.
Yes, but I'm trying to
explain to you why it is that we've wound up with a magistrate and indeed a legal system where somebody saying something like that Anna Soubry is a traitor winds up being convicted, whereas Anna Soubry, who herself had gone around saying that people who had voted Leave were Nazis, doesn't wind up convicted.
No, but your
situation where the judiciary, in some cases at any rate, are openly biased towards Remain. And in fact, the English Democrats were running a case on the question of when we actually were to get out of the EU. One of the judges who looked at this case was Mr. Justice Spencer, and we thought we looked up Mr. Justice Spencer, and it turned out there was a Mr. Justice Martin Spencer who was basically putting out on his Twitter account that anybody who voted for Leave had taken leave of their senses and had betrayed the future of the country, and that he was calling for another referendum. We then had another judge look at the matter, which was Mr.
Higginbottom. Okay, given that answer now, but can you tell me?
It turned out that
I've let you go on with your answer for a long time, but I really want you, because you just called it hypotheticals. When I asked you the reasoning...
I haven't called hypotheticals. I'm telling you an example of what's actually happened.
So why do you think then that equality and diversity is such a bad thing in the eyes of the law? Because you know we're getting texts in right now immediately saying that people think you're a racist.
Okay, that's the usual smear from the left.
Tell us why.
I'm not really that fussed about people saying that. It's one of those sort of sayings that people say nowadays, which means sort of shut up rather than you've got a point or not. They're not prepared to
answer. We are in a situation where
the state is appointing people on the basis of political views rather than on the basis of whether they're any good at the job.
And can you give me, other than today's case, specific examples of when magistrates who have applied the equality and diversity mantra that you yourself brought up, these aren't hypotheticals, you yourself brought this up as a reason as to why you believe some of the judiciary is biased. Aside from today's case, can you give me specific examples?
I was referring you to Mr. Justice Martin Spencer. And his comments about how anybody who voted leave...
Yeah. And when was that applied in court?
Senses. And I was about to tell you...
And when was that when applied in court?
Me, of Lord Justice Hickenbottom, who's a member of the European Legal Institute, which is an organisation whose purpose is to work behind the scenes in order to broaden and deepen the remit of EU law.
And when were those men... who you've just given an example, can you give me an example then of the cases where they showed bias based on what you know about them?
Well, I certainly think they showed bias in terms of their response to...
Yeah, but it's when they're in court.
The case about Brexit.
But when they are in court, they are presumably impartial. I mean, judges have opinions, but when they are in court, they are impartial. Isn't that the point?
What are they?
Well, they're supposed to be, yes, so I want an example.
I agree, they're supposed
exactly.
to be.
Exactly, so I want an example so of when they
so
are
why,
in court.
So why do we have a system which is now appointing people only on the criteria of whether or not they can prove a lifetime's commitment to equality and diversity?
But you can't give me one example.
No wonder we wound up with this very strange decision by the Supreme Court, where the Supreme Court was saying something that was completely contrary to our whole tradition of what should happen about whether cases should be decided in court or in Parliament about parliamentary procedures.
But you can't
The High Court...
You can talk over me all you like, but you can't actually give me one example of a case.
Three or four examples.
No, you've not. You've given me examples of judges that have shown their own opinions out of court. You've not given me an example of one case other than today's where actually a judge has shown bias in the courtroom as a result of the equality and diversity you spoke of. I mean, it's so important.
I don't agree with that.
No, you've given me examples of judges that have given their own opinion.
I wasn't asked, come on, to give you such things.
Well, then why did you give equality and diversity as the reason as to why we're going to head in a handcart and this person was biased who went to...
I was explaining to you how the judiciary are appointed.
It's very surprising that something that you believe has caused such bias...
How the judiciary are appointed.
So you believe that that has caused such bias, you can't give me one example of a case where that bias has been displayed. Not one example.
I haven't said that at all.
You can't. You can't give me an example. You say that the reason that this case of today is an example of the judiciary being biased because of the equality and diversity criteria. So I said to you, great. Give me an example of a case where that's happened.
What I said to you was that this is basically we had a number of instances where Remainers have said things and nothing very much has happened to them. I mean, give you a fairly extreme example. Jo Brand said that she thought it was okay to chuck battery acid at Farage.
Yeah, which Farage. She had to apologise for and retracted,
and it was
completely wrong.
She was not prosecuted.
But I'm just...
And that is to be contrasted with what's happened with Amy today, where she has not offered any violence, she has not suggested any violence, but instead she has been sent to prison and she will be in prison over Christmas. We live in a two-tier system where people are not treated fairly, and if you are not saying the sort of things that the establishment wants to hear, then you wind up being treated in this completely improper and unfair and disproportionate way.
It seems just a shame you can't give me examples of any other convictions where this has happened by such a biased judiciary.
I think that's a nonsensical question in the light of what I was asked to come on to talk to you about.
But that's the reasoning you have given me as to why this case is apparently a display of complete bias. However, I've
told you that
there
is a difference between the treatment of Remainers and Leavers. And that's perfectly straightforward.
Perfect. Give me more examples.
There are innumerable examples of what's happened with...
Great. Give me more examples, then, of court cases where leavers have been harshly treated. We've got this one today, Amy. Any others?
Are you suggesting that there's been no other leavers who wind up being prosecuted and convicted when Remainers wouldn't have been?
That's your argument, so you tell me. That is your argument. You are pushing that is the reason why this happened today. So I'm simply asking you for other examples of where leavers have been unduly harsh and harshly treated by the law due to the bias you speak of. And
the
you can't give
I'm
me one more
about
example.
Is that the way that the system has addressed this.
And you can't give me one example.
There are a number of other people who have been prosecuted in this kind of way.
Great. Who?
I haven't got a list here in front of me. I wasn't asked to come on about that.
Well, it just seems odd that the reasoning that
you've
come on.
Have you got a list of the contrary? I mean, have you got any points that you want to make specifically? Or are you just, is this just one of these situations where you come out with a load of arguments against me without having actually said that that's what you want me to talk about?
Well, bearing in mind that it was you who said that the reason, and I'll say it again because it doesn't seem to be getting through, is you were the one that said the reason you believe that bias is being shown is because of the equality and diversity criteria of some of the people that are appointed to the judiciary, and that's why leave people are harshly treated. And I said, great.
I didn't say some of the people. You obviously didn't listen to what I said, with all due respect.
Well, and I said,
what I said was that the appointment system to the judiciary, ever since Tony Blair...
Great.
It was changed. Before Tony Blair, we had a situation where people were appointed to the bench on the basis of merit. Since Tony Blair, we have had a Judicial Appointments Commission whose fundamental remit has been to appoint only those people who can demonstrate a lifetime commitment to equality and diversity. That's what
the
system.
And the cases that you base
and
that on are.
What I'm trying to say to you is that the whole way in which the system operates, as regards people who are considered to be political opponents to equality and diversity, is biased against them.
And the cases that you have to demonstrate that are?
I don't have to demonstrate it. It's a straightforward point. It's out there. If you look at the equality, if you look at the Judicial Appointments Commission website, you could see what I'm saying.
All right, Robin Tilbrook, Chairman of the English Democrats. Thank you very much indeed. So that's the English Democrats. What they have to say about this. What do you think? 0344 499 1000. Mr. Tilbrook thinks that there is some bias being shown here, especially due to the way in which Tony Blair changed the rules for appointing certain people in the judiciary. I asked repeatedly for an example of cases where that happened, and I didn't get one. I heard some judges who were saying some bad things, but I didn't actually hear one example, other than today's, of when that's actually happened. But it's, of course, it's not just on one side that this seems to happen. There was that awful audio, I think we found it now, haven't we, of the doctor that was saying some terrible things about Boris Johnson, which is yet another example of sort of on the other side of things, people being really, really divisive. When does free speech end and harassment start? What's your reaction to today's sentencing? Do you think it's actually worthy of going to prison? And coming up later, we might talk about how we can actually put all this behind us and work together. So all of that and more coming up here on Talk Radio.
Feel the forthright fury
across the UK, online and on DAB.
This is Talk Radio.
Good evening. It's Christo here on Talk Radio with your late night show. Thank you very much indeed for your company. So we've been talking about when MPs or people in the public get harassed, get nasty things said to them. Anna Soubry and the lady who was found guilty of harassing her, well, that lady was sentenced to 28 days in prison. I think it's a 14-day minimum sentence, meaning that she'll spend Christmas behind bars. She was standing for the English Democrats. I don't think that, I'll be honest, I don't think I'm going to be on the Christmas card list of Mr. Tilbrook from the English Democrats during the last part, because, and again, just forgive me if I'm wrong on this, because I know that he wasn't very happy about being asked for examples, saying that he wasn't asked to come on and talk about examples, but he came on to defend the lady in question. If you don't know who she is, her name is Amy Dallamura, who's been found guilty. Came on to defend her, saying that he essentially believed that there were elements of the judiciary that were biased due to an equality of criteria of equality and diversity that's required by some in the judiciary. So I said, well, give me some examples of some cases where that's been displayed. Oh, well, I wasn't asked to come on and talk about that. Well, surely if that's your defence, you'd have a couple of cases at hand. You know, that would be like me saying, I don't know, every single Remainer hates Britain. And you'd say to me, well, okay, can you give me an example of Remainers that hate Britain? And then I would be expected to come up with some examples. So it seems very strange that you'd come onto a radio station to defend your position and then have no actual examples to defend your position. But maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I misinterpreted things. As always, I do appreciate you telling me if I'm wrong. 0344 499 1000. A few texts and tweets coming in here. She wouldn't have been convicted and sentenced if it wasn't malicious. She's going through a thorough mental health act assessment. She was obviously deemed well enough to stand trial. Some MPs have gone through a hellish time. Thank you for that. Dave says, well done for taking Robin Tilbrook to task. Thank you very much indeed for that one. You cannot have ultimate power without return argument. Is our government going to tread on those of us who have the courage to approach and argue, says Simon on Twitter. Thank you for that. Margot, brilliant interviewing re-English Democrats. Equality and diversity is not actually equality, and the judiciary is biased. I think she's quoting him there. What planet is this man on? Well done for showing what a ridiculous bunch they are. Well, I don't know whether they are ridiculous, but I just wanted an example of bias, bearing in mind that if the judiciary as a whole or the judiciary in part is biased, you would think that he would have some examples above and beyond today that would display that bias. And he didn't have one. He had nothing. So it seems a bit odd to me. Kyle says the harassment woman broke the law. That's why she's in prison at Christmas. She'll get a Christmas dinner at least. Let's go to Neath and talk to Noah. Hi there, Noah.
Hello, Christo.
So,
well, Mike.
What do you...
Sorry, you first.
Well, do you know what, Noah? I'm going to hold on to you because we've got some other audio I'd like to play for you at the moment, because this is the audio of one of the activists who was at the demonstration that was protesting the fact that Boris Johnson had won the election. There are a few beeps in it because she's in a bit of a potty mouth, let's be honest. Fruity language, we're calling it. Let's hear it.
I wish him a horrible death. I don't know if you're allowed to put that online, but he's everything up for people my age, our future. I plan to work in the NHS. I plan to be a doctor. I plan to actually care about people. And he doesn't care. And to see working class people caring about Boris Johnson, they're shooting themselves in the face. It's disgusting. And yeah, I wish him the worst. Go Boris Johnson. Honestly, what a sorry.
So, Noah, what do you make of that woman's awful words, really? I mean, God, discourse has become terrible, hasn't it?
Forgive me if my response isn't the typical one, but I find displays of impotent rage like that hilarious.
And are they something that you should be convicted for? I mean, this other lady was convicted for harassment. I mean, do you think that that's right?
No. As far as I'm aware, this woman was only in the presence of Soubry on two occasions. I might be wrong about that, but I think it was only two occasions. Whether you're on the left or the right, freedom of speech is a moral absolute. And I think it's wrong that people are prosecuted for exercising that free speech and engaging in legitimate political activity. The only restriction there should ever be on free speech is when you're on the dock being asked questions. If you commit perjury, then you should be prosecuted. But that's the only restriction I would have on free speech.
So what if I were to stand in the middle of Trafalgar Square calling for all, I don't know, Jewish people to be murdered? Do you think that would be okay?
It's not okay, but I think you should have the right to express your opinion, because at least then we all know what kind of person you are.
But what if that then caused some people to say, actually, that's quite a good idea? What if someone said, well, I'm going to go and punch a Jewish person because of what I've just heard?
then this is why we need to have debate and open discussion. We, instead of no platforming these fools, we should be challenging them to debates and eviscerating them in debate.
So if I were wanting to have the free speech to, I don't know, someone comes for a job interview and they're a woman, should I be able to say, well, you know what, I think you're really great, really like you, but unfortunately I just don't like women at work, so I think you should go home. Should I be allowed to say that? Should I be allowed to have those opinions and display them in the workplace?
Yes, but it would be very unprofessional.
And it would also be an absolutely appalling world for us to live in, Noah. I mean, none of us have full free speech. If we did, then we would go back to the times of no blacks, no dogs and no Irish on shop windows.
At least then you'd know to avoid these people because they're bigots. We need a free market of both ideas and of goods and services. And if you're stupid enough to cut your nose off because you don't want to serve someone because of their skin colour, then the market will punish you.
Well,
people
it might
won't
do,
want you like the plague.
But it might also encourage some people to shop there. But also, what about the poor customer? What about the poor person that wants to go and get their shopping, who happens to be from an ethnic minority? You think that they should actually have to, they should get into a shop and they should have to get their goods to the counter and then they should have to say, oh, damn, I've come into the wrong shop because this is a white shop. Is free speech really worth that?
It's better than the alternative, which is tyranny. If you take away people's free speech, corruption and criminality and incompetence flourish.
It's not tyranny, it's protection. It's protection for those people who are vulnerable to prejudice, isn't it?
The greatest protection from evil is freedom of speech and freedom of expression. And those who would exchange their freedom for transitory security will have neither.
But also the greatest friend of people who perhaps want to have the most appalling racist, sexist, homophobic views could be a full society of free speech. And we don't have that. I can't stand in the middle of the street and call for the police to be killed. You know, you can't incite violence against others. That's just not the society we live in, because most people want to live in a kind society, a society where people who are perhaps vulnerable are protected, don't they?
You can protect people and help people in other ways other than the law and force of violence.
So an old black woman who's wheeling home her shopping basket, someone should be able to go up to the street and call her a racial slur because of free speech being more important than anything else.
Free speech is what protects us from tyranny.
So the answer is yes, you would like to live in a world where there could be an because I'm actually referring to an example that someone put online just the other day of an elderly black woman being approached at a tube station and someone shouting at her, "You're the part of the problem here," and she just looked very bewildered. So you're happy that that is the society for that to happen?
I'm not happy, but the alternative is worse. Better that than being sent to a gas chamber.
Well, there's the argument to say that that would lead to people being led to the gas chamber, Noah, because it's that kind of society where that would happen. So I find that a really odd stance to take. 0344 499 1000 is the number to call. You know what, we're getting a lot on this, so we'll continue it into the next hour, and we'll talk about Uber as well, and whether you are happy or sad that their appeal is set to take place. All of that and more. It's Christo with your late night show here on Talk Radio. Let's get you up to date now with the news headlines. Here's Daryl Jackson.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
This is Talk Radio.
Good evening, all. Christo here on Talk Radio with your late night show. How are you? With you till 1 o'clock. Thank you very much indeed for your company. We've been talking about free speech and whether holding an MP to account, going up to them a couple of times. Well, I think the judge said numerous, but I think the actual bones of the story is a couple of times. And hassling Anna Soubry. And this is what happened to one of the election candidates that was standing against her in her Broxtowe constituency. So it was a lady by the name of Amy Dalla Mura, standing for the English Democrats. She was convicted of harassing Ms. Soubry because there was a particular event she was at, and she kept interrupting it and trying to get on the stage. She filmed it on Facebook, interrupting her, live streaming her, so the meeting had to be abandoned when she refused to stop. And also, there was an occasion where Ms. Soubry was on Newsnight, and she kept sort of interrupting, saying the word traitor and the like. So she was done for harassment, and she's been sent to prison for 14 days. Well, 28 days, minimum 14 days. So we've been discussing that, and whether it's ever acceptable to use your free speech in such a way, or whether there is a line. And it does appear that when you look at what happened today, that line was crossed. But what do you think? 0344 499 1000. We spoke to Noah before the news headlines, and Noah was saying, look, without free speech there's tyranny. And I was saying, yeah, but do you really want to live in a society where, you know, we can put signs up saying, you know, no blacks, no dogs, no Irish and no gays? And I don't really want to live in that society where you can essentially openly discriminate. I do sort of, although I think Noah was off the mark a bit, I do actually weirdly get where he's coming from with his argument, in as much as if prejudice goes underground, it almost becomes more toxic. And I've actually spoken to people from ethnic minorities before. I've spoken to gay people before on the radio. And actually, they themselves have said, so before you tear Noah apart on social media, which many of you are, and I'll get to that in a moment, but I've spoken to people who are usually the recipients, the victims of prejudice, and actually there have been a couple of occasions where they've said, you know what, we would rather it was out there. We would rather, actually, people were racist and homophobic openly, because although that wouldn't be a nice society, it's better than it being kept underground. And I kind of see that logic. Because if you know someone's homophobic, you'd avoid them. But the problem is, do you want to live in that society? Do you want to live in a society where people's toxic views are out there? But then, the flip side is that they get challenged that way, don't they? 0344 499 1000. I'll say it slower, because I'm terrible at saying it quickly. Do you know I tweeted out the wrong number earlier? As well, that's terrible. How many times have I said this number? But, you know, when you just type the wrong number, just one of the numbers was out. So I was like, come on, everyone, call me later tonight. And I did the wrong number. Sorry. 0344 499 1000 is the number to call. So Shree has sent a text. If you want to text us, by the way, text the word talk and your message to 87222. I think old Noah's head should be used as a doorstop. Oh, come on, poor Noah. Actually, in fairness, poor door. He's contradicted himself on a number of levels. Free speech without protections is nothing but tyranny. But I think a lot of these people that have some of these opinions, they do tend to contradict themselves. And again, I refer you back to the English Democrats that we spoke to in the last hour, who are representatives of this lady who's been convicted. And, you know, made it quite clear to them, you know, why do you think that this is an example of bias? Told me the reason. Okay, can you give me some examples of where this bias has been shown before? Not a thing. Not one example. And you kind of think, well, you don't have anything. Yeah, it's great to have an opinion. You think it's biased. But most people back up their opinion with actually some examples. 0344 499 1000. And of course, it happens on both sides. We played you earlier as well, that horrific audio of the, I mean, this is unbelievable, a doctor that was calling for Boris Johnson to be killed. So, whilst we have that conversation about free speech, let's also have a conversation about how we can perhaps bring the country together, dare I ask? Because we're really divided. Things have never, ever been worse. I've never known a situation where the UK is so toxic and so angry. And I include myself in that. Yeah, as you know, I consider myself a little bit of a Ramona. Well, actually, I've renamed myself now. I'm an Irramona. And you know what that is? An irrelevant Ramona. Because I think that a lot of Remain's arguments are just going to be crushed now by the fact that obviously Boris got an overwhelming majority. So it's difficult, I think, and I say this respectfully, that when you look at something you think is a bad idea, and I still think leaving the European Union is a terrible idea, just because lots of people have voted in favour of it, and just because lots of people have voted in favour of a government that wants to implement it, that doesn't stop it being a bad idea in your opinion. And so, I don't know, how can we display that without it all going to hell in a handcart? Because that's the other thing that's sort of happening a bit at the moment. I don't know if you've noticed that, but some people are saying now, well, you can't criticise us leaving the EU now. Well, why not? Doesn't stop being a bad idea in your opinion, just as it doesn't stop being a good idea in your opinion. If look, this is a far-fetched scenario, but if the Liberal Democrats had won the election and there was an overwhelming majority to therefore revoke Article 50, which is what they were putting on the agenda, people on the Leave side wouldn't have suddenly said, well, there we go, it's a good idea that we stay in the EU. Of course not. They'd have still continued to shout and scream because it doesn't become a good idea, in their opinion, to stay in the EU just because lots of people voted for it. So I don't understand why you're not allowed to still say it's a bad idea leaving the EU just because lots of people voted in order to do it. So, I don't know, can we do that? Are we able to have these opinions and work together going forward? 0344 499 1000 is the number to call. Coming up, by the way, we'll talk about Uber and what you think should happen next as well. And my little Uber story, which has not ended well. But I'll talk about that a little bit later on. Let's talk to Tony in Lancashire. Hi there, Tony.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, thank you. So what was it that prompted you to want to pick up the phone?
I was just listening to the conversation tonight, and my question is free speech quashed?
Is free speech, are you asking me that, or are you just sort of musing that out there?
Just, about the particular story.
Let me just remind everyone of this story again. So this is the lady by the name of Amy Dalla Mura, found guilty of harassment at Westminster Magistrates Court, and she was sentenced today, and that was because of the fact that she, in the eyes of the court, harassed Anna Soubry. At one point she was at an event and repeatedly interrupted her, live streaming the event on her phone, and this was an event in Parliament, and the meeting had to be abandoned because she refused to stop. And another time as well, when she was appearing on Newsnight, she repeatedly called her a traitor and disrupted the interview. Also as well, and I'm not sure this would have gone down particularly well in court, she refused to give her name and address when she was in court, which never goes down particularly well for when you're appearing in court. So that's what happened today. But of course, it's not just on the Leave side. We've seen some awful free speech being displayed. As I played to you in the last hour, we've got some audio of someone who's anti-Boris, who was saying terrible things about Boris wanting Boris to die and all this stuff as well. So the discourse has become really toxic, hasn't it, Tony?
Yes, it has, and maybe the latter of what you just said I didn't realise, but there's still the point of free speech. And what I was talking to your colleague before I came on air was, if we rewinded many years ago about people being gay and it being illegal, would a person who was a gay, and when it was illegal back, I don't know the exact date, was it 69? I can't remember. Would they have been dragged up to the same degree of this lady? And then you fast forward to where we are now, where it's totally different.
So, forgive me, I don't really get your point. So it used to be illegal to be gay, and it isn't anymore. Yeah. How does that relate?
But to have the free speech to say and talk about being gay, which back then gay people didn't have.
No, because it was illegal, and therefore you would have been
okay.
Someone could have prosecuted
incarcerated
you.
Incarcerated, like this lady has been.
Mm-hmm.
So, correlate that to this. What is the difference? If we fast forwarded from now to the same correlation in 30 years forward from now, would people be talking and saying, "Hang on"? You know, this lady was incarcerated because of free speech, or what words she wants to talk about, or different things. Are we not allowed now to speak in a free world like we weren't back then?
But I guess the difference is that there is that, I mean, if you're asking the difference between being gay and what happened with this lady, I know what you're saying. That basically years ago, Well, go on. Give another example then. If I'm not maybe getting it, give another example.
No. You've already got it. It doesn't matter about the subject. It could be any subject. I'm giving you a correlation there. It could be in the future. In 30 years' time, you know, we're not allowed to talk about such a thing now. It will be different. I've already given the correlation.
But the way I see it, that's a bit of a false comparison, is that...
Okay,
we are slightly more enlightened when it comes to race, gender and sexuality and the like than we used to be. But one is a choice and one isn't. Now, though, opinions are a choice. You have a choice as to whether you have an opinion or not. Whereas the difference between the enlightenment of realizing that gay people shouldn't be subject to prosecution is that we realize that it wasn't a choice. So therefore, to prosecute someone about something around themselves that isn't a choice is something that we needed to revise. You know, in the same way that there were other protected characteristics that needed to be revised. You know, you used to be able to be horribly sexist and women would be prosecuted if they were to stand up for it. But obviously we realised that was not particularly enlightened. Whereas what this case is about opinions and behaviour. And opinions and behaviour are a choice. And so therefore that's why I see it as a bit different, and that this probably won't change. Because it's opinions and it's behaviour based on those opinions. Like, she can hold those opinions, but she can't behave in that way because that's a choice. And she chose not just to hold those opinions, but to do so in a way that was considered to be harassment.
But if we could have rewinded back to the era we've talked about previously, and people could have been so passionate about their beliefs that they would have been hindered and taken in the same way as this lady has. I'm trying to think of another example.
I mean, I'll put it back at you. Do you think someone should be so passionate about their beliefs that they make someone who's in Parliament feel scared?
Yeah, I do, because...
Even after an MP has been killed? Even after the death of an MP? From murder? And an MP was murdered... Do you not think that's going to discourage people from being an MP if they think that what they're going to get is at worst murder, or at best a lot of abuse and sort of hassle in the street?
Okay. So does that mean that John Lennon wouldn't have become a superstar and a musician, then a superstar for him? He was killed.
Well,
or any other person in limelight, they put themselves in that era, then they are going to get that focus. They're going to get that. I don't agree that the person who killed John Lennon, or the chap that shot Reagan, he was trying to get the focus of Jodie Foster in his eyes as a he liked her and was attracted to her. But does that mean Reagan shouldn't have been a film star, or President of the United States.
Well, I guess the difference between the two is that one is a public servant and the reasoning to get into that kind of thing.
But you just said that, it's public servant, yeah.
Yes,
is an MP not a public servant?
Well, yeah, well, no, but the MP is a public servant. That's what I'm saying. So, yes, John Lennon isn't a public servant, and there are many, many, many... And the likelihood of
no,
a... No,
John Reagan was.
Say that again?
Reagan was a public servant.
Yes. And he was shot.
He was voted into office, yes, by a deluded person who thought that he was trying to impress... Jodie Foster, who's an actress.
So you're saying
that he shouldn't have been in office for the argument you just brought?
No, I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying that public servants usually have the motivation to try and make people's lives better. Pop stars, as wonderful and lovely as they are, their motivation is to usually make their lives better.
Reagan wasn't trying to make. Yeah, his previous life was an actor, but he is.
Yeah, but he ended up becoming a president, which is a public servant.
Yeah, so
public servants should be able to do that without being hassled or have people sort of being violent towards them.
He got attacked and shot.
Yes.
And you just said to me that a public servant who puts themselves in the limelight shouldn't be attacked or this, that, and the other. If they put them in the limelight, there is no difference.
So, what do you think? It should be fair game if whether you're in the limelight for whatever reason, you put yourself out there, it's fair game. You might find someone's violent towards you. You might find someone harasses you. You might find that you're scared to leave your house, but that is just that's fair game because you put yourself out there.
But there's many public servants, many MPs will feel the same.
I.e.? What do you mean, feel the same as you or feel the same as me?
No, feel the same as we're discussing. I mean, they will probably, who are in the limelight, they will not want to leave the house due to paparazzi, they will still feel on edge, not knowing what is around them.
Right.
No one can control that. No,
well, yeah, but you can control.
No one can control the person that attacked Reagan. No one can control the lady we're discussing. No.
Well, then why do we have security services? Why does the Prime Minister bother having bodyguards? Why don't we just let them walk down the road and give it a go? You know, anyone could go up and give him a slap if they want to. I mean, that would be ridiculous. And then by your logic, that would be their fault for becoming a prime minister. Like, you know, fine, you know, we'll get rid of Boris's security detail. And if you want to go up and slap him, it's fine because he chose to be prime minister.
No, I think we're on the same hinge here. The security service are probably not doing the right job.
No, I never quite get that. But Tony, thank you very much indeed for that. I'm not sure we are on the same hymn sheet, and I don't even know whether we're singing a hymn at all, frankly. 0344-499-1000 is the number to call. Support for Robin Tilbrook, by the way. Robin is 100% correct. This is the English Democrats guy that I spoke to in the last hour. The media is 99% remain biased, as is Anna Soubry, as is the judge who convicted Amy for nothing more than free speech. And I bet the wannabe doctor with the foul mouth won't go to prison. Well, it depends whether she does it in the presence of Boris Johnson and whether she shouts at Boris Johnson when she does it and does it more than once. I mean, if she does, I imagine she would go to prison, and it's probably fair enough, really. Again, though, Tanya, if you believe that judges are biased, can you give me some examples, please? I mean, you've got time to look them up on your computer, so maybe you will be able to. 0344-499-1000. That's the number to call. Coming up, we'll continue this conversation, because lots of you are calling about it. And also, we've got a couple of phone lines free at the moment. Uber as well, and what you think about their appeal, which is on the horizon. All of that and more coming up here on Talk Radio.
No nonsense, no prisoners, no substitutes.
This is Talk Radio.
Good evening. It's Christo here on Talk Radio with your late night show. How are you? Thank you very much indeed for your company here with you until 1 o'clock. We've been talking about free speech and whether today's conviction for harassment for the lady that, well, you can say it now, harassed Anna Soubry. She did it a couple of times. I thought it was more than twice, but it seems to have only been twice, so apologies that I said more than twice earlier. And, but it was pretty serious what she did. But do you think it was serious enough to warrant a conviction for harassment? And, obviously, you might believe as well that this is perhaps, I don't know, some sort of Remain conspiracy, because, of course, it was the harassment of an MP that had Remain tendencies, and that is Anna Soubry. And to what extent should you be able to sort of go up to an MP and shout at them if you wish to? 0344 499 1000. And what are we going to do to try and improve our discourse going forward? Well, how are we going to bring the country together? Boris said that, didn't he, on the steps of Downing Street, about sort of trying to unite us in some way. Well, how are we going to do that going forward? And of course, it's not just against Remain MPs that this has been happening. We heard the terrible audio of the junior doctor as well, calling for Boris Johnson to be killed. Now, there's no prosecution there as of yet, because I don't think she did it in the presence of Boris Johnson. And I don't know whether there's even been a police complaint about that person, but it is happening on both sides. And it does just seem like discourse has become extremely toxic. And as much as I hate certain aspects of politics in 2019, there are some results you have to accept, and this general election result, you do have to accept. It was hardly inconclusive, was it? 0344 499 1000 is the number to call. Something else as well for this hour I'd like to discuss with you, and that is the taxi app Uber. Now, you might not have seen this story because it happened just after the election, and of course on Friday and over the weekend, that's all anyone was discussing, so it might have gone under the radar for you, but Uber have launched their appeal against Transport for London and their decision to refuse to renew its operating licence over safety concerns. The ride-hailing app's regional general manager for Northern and Eastern Europe, Jamie Hayward, said safety is its top priority after filing an appeal at Westminster Magistrates Court. Westminster Magistrates Court has been very busy in the last few days. Our other stories from there as well. We are committed to Londoners and are working closely with TfL to address their concerns and requests as we have in 2017. TfL rejected Uber's application for a new London licence last month due to several breaches that placed passengers and their safety at risk. Where do you stand on this? Where do you stand on Uber and their licence being renewed? 0344 499 1000. Are you a regular Uber user? I have to say, our work account here, Talk Radio, is with Uber. Am I allowed to say that? Well, I have. And so, in a professional capacity, I get Uber quite often. And I get a bit of a mixed bag with Uber, actually, when I get it. I don't tend to use them in a personal capacity anymore, because I feel like a bit of a hypocrite when I do. I tend to try and use black cabs or other cab firms. The reason being that I do believe that the standard of driving around London is now utterly, utterly appalling. Whenever you're held up, whenever someone's doing an illegal turn, whenever someone's driving the wrong way up a one-way street, whenever someone's driving in a cycle lane the wrong way, whenever someone is doing something that is so barking mad moronic, it's nearly always a Prius. And it's constant. You know, even on my journey home earlier, before I came back in here, going through the junction in Brixton, near to Kennington Lane, and there's a queue of buses, queue of cars, they're beeping their horns, because there's an Uber driver in the middle of the road, looking at his sat-nav, waiting for it to update, not knowing whether to go left or right. Because we've actually, by licensing applications like that, there's a number of reasons. Firstly, we've increased the number of Priuses and private hires on London's roads by a ridiculous number. So that's leading to more congestion. Secondly, half of them are driving around empty looking for a fare. Ridiculous. Thirdly, how can you push that it is absolutely ridiculously wrong to use your mobile phone while you're driving if you are licensing people whose only means of making a living is using their mobile phone while driving. That to me is utterly ridiculous. I don't care if it's in a cradle. You still need to use it. You still need to press the buttons. And also, I was always under the impression as well that if your phone is going to be in a cradle and going to be used, it can only ever be used in the central part of the dashboard. I don't see Uber drivers' mobiles in the central parts of their dashboard. I see it to the right of their dashboard all the time. Well, I thought that that wasn't allowed. And finally, it's promoting people having absolutely no sense of direction whatsoever. It used to be that when you got a minicab, when you got any other kind of taxi or anything else around our cities, the driver would have some idea of where they were going, some clue of at least the direction they had to go in. Whereas when it comes to Uber, they just blindly follow sat-nav. They've no idea of the layout of the roads. They've no idea whether they're turning left at the turn coming up or the one after. They've no real idea of where they're going. And for me, that has absolutely made standards plummet. And it's a real shame. It's a real shame. I'm not saying that Uber shouldn't have existed. I'm not saying Uber shouldn't exist. But actually, TfL and Uber have done it to themselves. So I am probably in favour of them keeping their operating license, but I would restrict it massively. I would. Because the numbers are ridiculous. The numbers of empty Priuses driving around looking for a fare, that's touting for trade. That's doing what black cabs do. And let's talk about black cabs for a moment. And again, I don't think most black cabbies are against competition. Without Uber, black cabs, there's no way they would take cards now. For instance, every single black cab takes cards now. That's brilliant. You used to say to a black cabbie, look, I'm going to pay by Visa, and they'd look at you like you'd ask them for a kidney. You know, now they actually take cards. So that competition has improved standards with black cabs. But if I was a black cab driver, I would be utterly furious that I'd spent £70,000 on this car, and I'm now driving it in streets that are far more congested because of empty Priuses and cycle lanes. I'd be furious that there are Priuses running around empty, and the sheer number of them means that when you go on your phone, you can get one within 30 seconds to a minute. Well, that is plying for hire. That is the equivalent, the digital equivalent, standing on the side of the road and raising your hand. And I'd be furious about that, especially as they don't have to have the same level of training, especially as there are no restrictions in the same way as there are on black cabs of the vehicle that they can actually drive. So I'm all for competition. I'm all for the free market. But even the freest of free markets isn't totally free. The government is there to have certain restrictions on what you do when you're operating a business. And they didn't do that enough with Uber. Now, there are all sorts of conspiratorial reasons why. Some said that David Cameron was friends or family members with whomever when it comes to the Uber board. There are other, far more other sinister conspiratorial reasons as to why. I don't really care. All I'm saying is that they've been hoisted by their own petard. They've been hanged by themselves. Because for me, it's gone too far. There are too many of them. There are too many of them. And that's aside as well from the safety concerns, which a lot of people have when it comes to Uber drivers. And there were 43 drivers that managed to allow unauthorized people to upload their photographs to legitimate driver accounts. That meant they could pick up passengers. That resulted in 43 drivers making at least 14,000 uninsured trips. That's aside from claims of inappropriate behaviour, harassment and all those sorts of things that have happened. Now, like I said, Uber are doing everything they can to fix it. They take this sort of thing really, really seriously. And I have to be honest, over the weekend I had an Uber driver and I'm pretty sure he was utterly hammered. I didn't know for sure, but I was pretty sure he was. Very nice fellow, got on really well with him. But the stink of booze in his car was just unbelievable. And every single time he took a drink, I could smell brandy. And he looked like he'd had a drink. But like I said, I wasn't sure. Now, I'd like to thank the Metropolitan Police and the 101 service that I got through, because I thought I did the right thing. I really thought about it when I got to work. I was like, was he? Was he not? I don't know. I don't want to ruin a guy's livelihood. On the one hand, I really don't, because, you know, I'm not a police officer. I've not got a breath test. I don't know whether he'd had a drink or not, but so I don't know whether I want to report it, because I don't want to ruin a guy's livelihood. But on the other hand, if he's picking up passengers and he's driving a car around London and he's had a few drinks, well, that's really, really a terrible thing to be doing, and would put lives in danger. So what do I do? And I got into work and I spoke to my producer and I said, what should I do? I think I just got an Uber driver in, and he was lovely and he was so nice and I was getting on really well with him, but I think he was drunk. And my producer at the weekend immediately said, you've got to, you know, well, actually I said to her, I really think I should ring the police, do you think? And she said, yes. She said, absolutely, you've got to. And I rang 101 and I explained it to 101. I said, look, this is what has gone on. I don't know that he was drunk, but I feel like he was. And it felt like he was, and it smelt like he was, and he was chatting like he was, and he was slurring his words a bit. But I don't know him. Maybe that's how he talks. I don't want to ruin a guy's livelihood. And the police said to me at 101, you know what? If we've got his registration, which I gave to them, then we'll put it on ANPR, which is, you know, the number plate recognition. If he gets pulled over and we breathalyze him and he's drunk, then you know you've got a drunk driver off the road. And if we don't, then if he's not drunk and he passes the breathalyzer, then, you know, there's going to be no more altercations. There's going to be no more ramifications. He'll go on his way. And I thought, you know what? You're right. You know, pull him over. And if he passes the breath test, no harm done. So that's what I did. I gave him the registration. Idiots took it down wrong. The idiots took down the wrong registration. So thank you, Met Police UK, for that one. I won't tell you what happened subsequently, or should I? Should I tell you what happened subsequently? Oh, go on, then I will. They then rang me. This is the police, rang me today, after I'd rung them for an update on as to what happened. Because, again, I didn't report it to Uber because I didn't want to report it to Uber until I knew the outcome of what the police had found. And I knew the police would get him within seconds because there's cameras all over London. The police rang me back today and said that there was no trace of his registration number. And I said, right, oh, I don't know what that means. And they said, that means that he's cloned his registration. So you've got to ring Uber and report it. So then I rang Uber and reported that he'd cloned his registration. Then the police rang me back in the middle of that phone call and said, oh, we got the registration wrong. We're really sorry. And I said, well, hang on, I've just told Uber now. So now this poor guy, I don't know whether he's still got his Uber account or he hasn't. I feel terrible for it, really. 0344 499 1000, though. Where do you stand when it comes to Uber in our city? By the way, the Met Police have apologised since. They've rung me back. They've apologised profusely. And I've told them they're idiots. They had an open goal, potentially. There was a drunk driver on London's roads. And they didn't take the number down properly. I don't know why I bother. I genuinely don't know why I bothered calling them. Because now I've just opened up a can of worms. And I don't know whether this guy had a drink or not. But it did reveal to me, again, some of the concerns that we have when it comes to Uber. And by the way, Uber have been brilliant. Taking it really, really carefully. And seriously, they've taken it really, really seriously. 0344 499 1000 is the number to call. Uber's appeal. What side are you on? Send me a tweet at @Christo_radio or at Talk Radio, and you can text the word talk and your message to 87222. Text will be 25p plus your standard network rate. Let me know what you think about whether Uber should survive or whether it's time to revoke their license permanently. All of that and more coming up here on Talk Radio.
Supercharged current affairs debate and electrifying opinion. This is Talk Radio.
Evening all. 17 minutes to midnight. How are you? It's Christo. here on Talk Radio. We'll be till 1 o'clock with your late show. Lots we've been discussing. Free speech. Where does that start and where does harassment start and when do they cross over to each other? That's something we've been discussing this morning. This evening, I should say. We're nearly into morning. The other one is Uber as well. Might have gone under the radar, this one. The appeal has been lodged with Westminster Magistrates Court for them to be able to keep their London licence. And if you're listening outside of London, this is going to affect you too, because I imagine that this story will be very closely looked at by other councils across the UK about whether they are facing the same problems with Uber. Though I will say London does seem to have its very own specific set of problems when it comes to Uber, especially when it comes to the black cab. And I have immense amount of sympathy for black cab drivers. Okay, they're not always perfect. If you cross them on Twitter, they are so vile, some of them. Some of them I blocked when I first offended Twitter 5 years ago, and I've never unblocked them because they're just literally vile. But I suppose if I was someone who was having my industry eroded, that I trained very, very hard for by doing the knowledge and bought a taxi that was £70,000 and had to be wheelchair accessible and had all of these rules to follow, and then a company came in with billions and billions of pounds and was able just to bypass all those rules, I'd probably be quite vile as well. 0344 499 1000. And thank you, Val. I don't know if I told you heard my story in the last part that I had an Uber driver over the weekend who was absolutely lovely and I felt terrible about it, but I'm sure he was drunk. So I rang and reported him to the police after he dropped me off. It was actually pointless because the Met Police took the number down wrong. So it was passed on to the City of London Police, but again, it was the wrong registration number. So that was a bit annoying, has to be said, because they probably had an open goal there. But anyway, I don't know. I can't say that I know, because obviously it's a few days late now. Simon wants to talk about this in the New Forest. Hi, Simon.
Good evening, Christo.
How are you tonight? What's going on? Tell me.
Well, frustrated, poor.
Oh, you
know,
dear.
You know this. I wanted to sort of speak to you about, about this. Now, I don't know whether you remember my situation, but I'm a taxi driver. I drive in the New Forest area.
Yep.
And what I do is I break the mould because I drive for Uber as well. So when my own business is quiet, I turn myself into an Uber and do that.
But you don't drive a black cab, did you say?
Well, I drive a Hackney carriage vehicle, but it's a taxi.
Yeah, but it's not. You don't have the same restrictions as black cab drivers. It can be a pretty standard car that you use, right?
I mean, outside of London, yeah. I mean, a lot of people think that a Hackney carriage has got to be the traditional style black London taxi. A Hackney carriage just applies to the type of license.
Yes, and in London, the Hackney carriage is the black cab, but outside of London, yeah, the Hackney carriage is the license for other taxis. So what car do you actually drive, just out of interest? So that
I don't really want to give too much away, just in case the wrong people are listening.
All right. Is it a particularly special? I mean, is it like a DeLorean from Back to the Future or something? I mean,
will people really know
who you are?
it's a people carrier.
Oh, all right, fine. People, that's enough. So that just people, so that I understand. Okay, so you've got a people carrier. You're a normal mini cab, normally.
Hackney carriage.
But that doesn't mean you can be hailed in the street in the New Forest, does it?
Okay.
Oh, okay, that's interesting. Yeah. All right, so you can be.
Outside of London, so in London you've got what you would call your Hackney carriages and your mini cabs.
Yeah.
Which is actually just another way of saying taxi or private hire.
Yeah, okay, so right. You can be a taxi when you are a taxi, but you can also, because of the kind of vehicle you've got, switch to Uber when you want to.
Yeah.
Great.
So I can operate in my district as a taxi exactly the same as your London black cabs. The difference being is that if I am outside of my area, I can take pre-bookings from anywhere in the country.
Great. All right. And can you be an Uber in your area, or does your Hackney license stop you being able to be?
you are not supposed to be able to operate as an Uber within your district, but the app does not actually prevent you from doing so.
So you can if you want to, really, then, can't
yeah.
you?
And I do.
Oh, all right. I love that you reveal that, but you won't reveal what car you've got. But anyway, go on.
Well, it's only because my car is registered to my Uber account, and what I'm about to say could be quite controversial.
Go on, then.
So I hope and pray that Uber does not get its license back.
Why?
Now, I have defended Uber for the last 3 years. I have everybody that's got in my car and slagged Uber off and everything else. I've actually spoken up for Uber and said, no, it's actually, you know, the only thing they're guilty of is using technology using my industry. You know, it was the last industry really that could have technology influence, because short of ringing up, ordering a cab and getting one, what else can you do? So it's redefined the taxi industry. That's all they're guilty of. If it wasn't Uber, it would be someone else. And that's just the way it is. Having said that, they are destroying an industry that I love. And to put it into perspective for you, on Saturday night, just gone, what normally happens where I work is you get to a certain time of night and it goes dead. All the trade is finished. Everybody's gone home. Pubs and restaurants are shut and that's it. It's not a 24-hour world like somewhere like London. So it got to that time of night and I thought, right, okay, I'll go and put my Uber on and go and do a bit of that. And I ended up doing a journey that would normally put £60 in my hand. I did it for £14. And I have to wait a week to get it.
And do you get... Because I know that someone pays £14, but does mm-hmm. that equate to what you actually get?
That's after I get... So we don't see the fare beforehand. We get paid into our... What happens is every time you complete a journey, your total that you're going to get paid increases.
But do you see what the customer pays?
No.
So you just see when the journey takes place...
Yep.
What you're going to get. You don't see what I've paid, what Uber takes and everything else.
Exactly. We have no knowledge of any of that at all. All we see is what we get.
Right.
So after that journey was completed, I'm assuming that customer would have paid probably about £19, something like that, because we lose 25% of the fare. So after all said and done, I got paid £14, which would have been a £60 fare. And the trouble is, what's happening is that Uber, I will, if time permitting, suggest a way that this could be rectified. But Uber are becoming more and more invasive. There is no control over them at all. And it has meant that now it's everybody's go-to option whenever they want a ride. And what has also happened this year now, more than any other year, is people now, when they're ringing up and booking, they're asking how much a journey is going to be. And because they can call it up on their Uber app and see what Uber would charge them, when you quote prices from a normal taxi fare calculator, they think you're a rip-off merchant.
So what would you say to people to assure them that you're not ripping them off? Because I get why someone... would think that, and they would think that based on Uber's pricing structure, which I do know, by the way, is a loss leadering structure, which means that, and if anyone doesn't know what a loss leader is, it's when you've got billions of pounds of investment, meaning that you can undervalue and cut out the competition until such a time as the competition goes out of business, and then you go into profit. So it's like planning to be making a loss, basically. Yeah. And I know that certainly, I don't know if it still is, but there have been times in Uber's career that that's been the case. So what would you say to those people that say, well, look, this just exposes that cabbies like you have been overcharging all these years?
Well, for a start, we don't, right, so the laws, all right, the black and white laws.
Sorry, can I just jump in?
Yeah,
sorry.
Yeah.
Simon, someone is tweeting here, and forgive me for saying this.
Yeah, okay.
These aren't my words. saying, this is not true. He's actually calling you a liar. Before the job, you see roughly what you'll be paid, and then after, you see what you'll be paid and they'll be paid, and they paid.
Right. Okay. Well, let me say, that feature, there's features, all right, so every different region and different district has got slight differences with their Uber app. Now, for example, and I don't know, you might be able to tell me this, there was talk that they were going to put a feature on your app. When I say your app, I mean the customer's app, right? To say that if you don't want to talk to the driver and you want a quiet journey, you press this button and it tells the driver that you want a quiet trip. Now, have you seen that in London?
Well, I see that when I order an exec. I don't get that feature when I order a standard one, but I get that feature if I order an exec. It'll ask if you've got luggage, it will ask if you want conversation, and it'll ask me something else as well. I don't know what else it'll ask.
Okay. So in Southampton, where I am, we don't have any of that. All we have is Uber X, and we don't have any enhanced features at all. So you can't even order, for example, an Uber XL, which would give you a bigger car than normal. We don't have anything like that. So all of the regions in the country have got differences on their apps. So I'm not going to say that your guy is not telling the truth, but what I will say is that
you're also not a liar.
that pricing feature that he's just mentioned, whereby we see it before we do the journey, that literally has come into effect from last weekend. So up until last weekend, we didn't have that. We didn't know what we were going to get. And it's only an estimate at the end of the day. So, you know, it's not uniform throughout the country. So, again, that guy's probably 100% right at what you're saying.
So there are some Uber regions or Uber features or some Uber apps that will give you a rough fare of what you'll get. There are others that don't. All right.
It's something they're obviously rolling out throughout the country, but it doesn't all happen at once.
So what would sort all this out then? What would make it a more level playing field? You just spoke about how at the weekend you drove someone home and got a £14 fare for it, whereas you would have got £60 if you were charging as a minicab. What justifies you getting three times that money and tells us that you weren't overcharging to start with?
Because, this is going back to your original question, right? So the answer to that question is, taxi drivers do not set their prices. They are set by the people, the councils that license them. It's councils who set taxi fares, not the companies themselves. But that's taxi fares, right? Private hire, by law, are allowed to charge whatever they like. The caveat on that is that it has to be an amount that is pre-agreed before the journey takes place.
Right.
So if you take any minicab journey and you haven't discussed the price beforehand, at the end of that journey, the fare, in effect, should be zero. Because if you have agreed a fare of, say, £10, when you reach your destination, if the driver then turns around and says, actually, it's going to be £20, you're breaking the law.
And that always used to be the advantage of getting a private hire, is you might not get as nice a car, you might sit in traffic, but you'd paid a fixed fare that you'd planned beforehand. Seems so archaic now. You know, I'm going to Streatham from Brixton. How much is it? It'll be a tenner. Great. I know what that is already, but that's just so archaic.
But this is how Uber fall in line with that, because they've already got their pricing structure is uniform, and whether it's advertised to the customer or not beforehand, it's all down in legislation that this is what they charge. Now what I do is I run in conjunction with the council laid out. So I've actually got a meter in my car. Some private hires have a meter, some don't. Now I've actually got a meter in my car because I'm already a Hackney carriage, so I have to have one by law. So I just run to the meter. Or if I know how much the fare is going to be, I know how much to charge the customer without them sort of flipping their lid and saying, well, you know, you're ripping me off. But because by the very nature, taxis and private hires have always been at a certain price. And like I say, drivers do not decide how much they're going to charge. It's illegal. Uber has come in with this ridiculously underpriced structure. Now, the other thing, of course, is that you don't have tariffs. So whereas normally you would get to a certain time of day and the tariff would increase or decrease, in line with a council stipulation again, Uber doesn't have any of that. It's a uniform price across the board. So that means that in the case where I did the journey that would have given me 60 quid, that's partly because my tariffs would have gone up.
Hmm.
So I've lost out on that as well. And the thing is, it then takes away the opportunity to earn a little bit extra, because it makes what is already a cheap fare twice as cheap.
So what would solve this problem? Right. You said you had a perfect solution. Right. We've only got a minute left, so go on.
Right, so this is what Uber needs to do, okay? First of all, even though it's illegal to restrict the amount of private hires that are licensed by a council, that doesn't mean to say that Uber cannot bring in their own in-house limit system. So they need to stop flooding an area with as many cars as they can possibly get. They need to be able to restrict that number. Secondly, they don't have to be as cheap as they are. A lot of people use Uber for the convenience. They could actually put the fares up to just below the normal taxi threshold. People will still save money, they will still use it, and the drivers would earn money. And here is the crucial thing, because you know the safeguarding issue that you've just said about, that's happened in London, it's because people go out, they rent a car or they buy a car, they then realise that they can't actually afford to run it because they're not earning enough money, which means they've got to break the law by allowing pools of drivers to use each other's vehicles, which is illegal. That's what's happened here. So that vehicle literally never is switched off, so that it is constantly running, so that it is earning enough money to generate paying the bills. And that's all down to Uber's greed. But this is the reason why, because the business model throughout the world is exactly the same. In America, for example, you don't have to be a licensed private hire driver. So you can do it in your own car. Oh. It just a bit of extra fuel.
All right, Simon, we've got to leave it there, but I get it. They should charge more and have fewer drivers. I mean, I actually agree with that. I don't know whether it's going to happen. But listen, we've got to leave it there. We're going to continue this in the next hour. Plus, I'll tell you a story of something that happened in a theatre that will amaze you. All of that coming up here on Talk Radio.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
This is Talk Radio.
I was in the other room talking to Daryl Morris. Sorry. He's arrived for his programme and I was gossiping to him. Well, I was gossiping at him, actually. It's just... He's looking great, though. He's lost loads of weight. Doing the overnight show really suits him. He's basically given up eating, which is working for him because he's never been in better shape. Brilliant. I'm with you till 1 o'clock. It's your late show here on Talk Radio. Morning. My name's Christo. It's 12:05. We've been talking about Uber and the appeal it's had for its licence, and whether you're in favour or against that appeal. 0344 499 1000. What have been your experiences with Uber? Do you always think that they are the safest way to travel? Have you always had a positive or indeed a negative experience with them? 0344 499 1000 is the number to call on that one. What would you do if you could advise TfL on what to do about Uber? And let's not forget as well, lots of other cities around the United Kingdom have the Uber app, so I'd like to know from you as well how it is in your city when it comes to Uber. Don't forget as well, you can send us a text as well. You can tweet us at Talk Radio. That's the way to call us. Oh, and apparently we're trying to get through to Paul in Somerset. We don't know what's happened to him. Maybe he's driving an Uber and he needs to pull over. You never know. Something else for this hour, which... this is a pretty amazing story, and I don't mean to laugh, because it's not funny. But it's not expected. It's not the kind of thing you expect to happen. And that is a barrister. Now, you expect at the English Royal Opera House, you know, the Royal Opera House, you expect it to be the place of good manners and, you know, typically English, you know, where... The things that happen in the theatre, you know, where someone needs to get past you. I mean, I was at the theatre last night. Okay, it wasn't the Royal Opera House. It was a drag queen pantomime. Not quite the same. But, you know, whenever you go to the theatre, you need to get past someone. Oh, I am sorry. Oh, excuse me. I am sorry. And everyone's very polite, aren't they? And all this, and they smile sweetly. So you'd expect at the Royal Opera House that this would be what happens every single time. Not the case, however, ladies and gentlemen, because a barrister punched a fashion designer. I'm sorry, I don't mean to laugh because it is actually awful and it is a serious crime, but I'm laughing because of the outrageousness of this happening in the Royal Opera House of all places. Now, this fashion designer had clambered over seats to reach the front row. Apparently, Siegfried, which was part of Wagner's Ring Cycle, began, which is a lovely performance at the Opera House. A gentleman by the name of Matthew Feargreave lost his temper with a fashion designer by the name of Ulrich Engler, who'd sat down next to his partner. Mr. Engler felt a constant flow of blows as he moved into an empty seat next to a lady by the name of Catherine Chandler, who is Matthew Feargreave's partner. So imagine this, Catherine Chandler sitting there. There's an empty seat next to Catherine Chandler, and this gentleman, the name of Mr. Engler, sits down in the empty seat. So the best front rows, by the way, for the Ring Cycle was £1,200. The next seats in row B, where Mr. Engler sat, were £356. So he told the City of London Magistrates Court he'd taken the seat which has a better view in previous nights, in October last year, but on this occasion, Feargreave took exception. I'd never seen anybody looking with so much anger and terror at me. So he sat down and handed Miss Chandler her coat, which had been on the seat, and then Mr. Feargreave said, "How dare you talk to my wife like this?" Charles Shelton for the prosecution said, "We say Mr. Feargreave had seen Mr. Engler climbing over the seat before that night and took some offence. He thought it was poor form and he was annoyed at Mr. Engler for that kind of action." Feargreave and his partner claimed that Mr. Engler had started the fight. They left the opera several minutes later and then the police were called. Apparently Mr. Engler actually ended up being in a police cell for a night until it ended up being revealed that he was the apparent victim of this assault. Ms. Chandler said that she had been assaulted by Mr. Engler, who pushed her into Feargreave, leaving him in agonizing pain. So, look, it just sounds like a really, really very, very sordid and very, very un-Opera House type affair. Mr. Engler said he never pushed anyone. I'm not that kind of guy. Elaine McMaster, who was in the audience, let's see what Elaine had to say, shall we? After the punch, people around that area were saying, "Shh." Can you imagine? You're in the Royal Opera House and a fight breaks out. The woman hissed at the audience and said, "My husband was only defending me. I thought it was so deplorable, the actions of Mr. Feargreave punching a man who climbed into an empty seat. People don't behave like that in the local cinema, let alone the Royal Opera House. And especially not the Ring, where people have paid a lot for the experience." I mean, let's put that to the test. This witness said that people don't behave like that in the local cinema, let alone the Royal Opera House. Well, you tell me. 0344 499 1000. When have you had a confrontation, altercation, or indeed a reason to pull up someone on their manners in the theatre or the cinema? When have you found yourself, maybe you didn't actually say anything at the time, but it's still bugging you, that person that opened their Maltesers during that really, really beautiful moment in the play? There is a moment in Holding the Man. Holding the Man is the most beautiful gay play, because it's a play and it's about gays. It's a gay play. And it's one of my favourite plays of all time. The book is beautiful, and it's about a guy called Timothy Conagrave. And Timothy Conagrave was an actor, never really made it to be famous. And as he was dying of AIDS in the 80s, early 90s, in Australia, he wrote his memoirs that he completed a few days before he died about the love between him and his partner, and they've been together since their school days. And then he died, and it became a worldwide best-selling book and an amazing play, and actually a Hollywood film in the end, right? And this play was on at the Trafalgar Studios once. And I'll never forget the scene where his partner is dying of AIDS. It's an awful death. It's a heartbreaking scene. The actor has tubes tied to him. There's total silence in the audience as slowly but surely you realise his life is ebbing away before someone's phone next to me started to play Diana Ross's I'm Coming Out. And I won't lie, it ruined the moment. It did ruin the moment. It really did. So, have you got a story like that? I've got more of them. I mean, I'm properly one of those people in the theatre who's like, come on, why don't you be quiet? Because there is, it just annoys me so much. It's like, if you're going to talk, you do it with your hand over your mouth and you do it really discreetly. You know, maybe you'd say to someone, you know, you'd turn to your partner after a particular number and you'd go, oh my God, that was brilliant. That's fine. But if you're going to just chat away throughout the whole thing, then just go and watch it on DVD. No. I mean, I won't actually forget the, I mean, I've got a couple of stories, actually, of altercations I've had in theatres. I mean, I'd like to point out that they don't all involve me being the perpetrator of such things. In fact, none of them do. I was once, well, I've got two stories. Which one do you want? Do you want George Michael or do you want Sunset Boulevard? Which one do you want? George Michael. You can have that one. All right. And I, this is a terrible story. Right, so we used to have a family member. I'm not going to say who the family member was. Mind you, I don't know whether she can be identified, so I probably could say who the family member was, but I won't. I'm not going to say who it was. And this family member was married into my family, and they were always a really a little bit difficult, right? You know, when you've got a family member and you take them somewhere and they're always complaining or always annoyed or there's always something wrong. You take them to a restaurant and they can't eat anything off the menu because they don't like it. And you take them to a show and you've got them there and they're wearing the wrong thing because they're annoyed. One of those people where, you know, they've got an inferiority complex because they're really insecure and think everything's terrible. But they've also got a superiority complex because they think everything revolves around them. I call them the biggest poo in the center of the universe, right? That kind of person. And this person loved George Michael, right, this family member. It's right, they're divorced now, so this person isn't in my family anymore. But this person always caused trouble wherever they were, and they loved George Michael. So when George Michael did his tour, I think it was Symphonica or something, back in like 2007, 2008, maybe even earlier than that, I was away for Christmas. So it was a lovely Christmas present. I took her and the rest of my family to see George Michael. Now, it happens that we have a familial connection to the George Michael family. My family does. So I actually did it through the familial connection that I've got and managed to get front row seats in the family area. So all of George's family, sorry, Yogg actually, he was known as to his friends and family, all of Yogg's family are around us. And we are front row, and we're front row sort of slightly to the left of the stage. So we're in a sort of raised area, and below us is where all of the wheelchairs are and the people who are sort of needing wheelchair access. Don't worry, we didn't have a fight with someone in a wheelchair. It's not that bad. And we're watching the show as a family, and what we'd done is we'd taken off our coats and we'd put them over the railing in front of us because we were at the front row. Now, during the show, when it was some of the sort of boppy little numbers, some ladies who were particularly big George Michael fans had walked and stood in the area in front of where we were sitting. Now, we were on a raised platform, so their heads were sort of about the level of the railings where our coats were hung over, but they weren't hindering our view in any way, shape or form. They were just there, but they were probably somewhere where they shouldn't have been. Probably quite a similar story to this one in the Times, where they had actually moved into a position where they shouldn't be, but they wanted a better view, right? Can we turn me down a bit, by the way? I think my mic's really loud. Everyone keeps complaining that I sound too loud. Why do you think that is? Am I not loud? Like, Tony's upset and... Oh, it's actually the same person. It's Tony. Yeah, Tony, you know you've got a volume switch on your radio. Tony's going, this person's so loud. It's upset me. I'm gonna turn him off. Well, you could turn down your volume, Tony. So anyway, so we are at George Michael. We are there. We're watching the show, and these ladies come and stand in front of us. Now, this particular family member, who is no longer a member of my family because of the divorce, making sure that this member is no longer bearing the Fufas name, she was getting more and more annoyed at these people being in front of us. And one or two of them, as they were stood there, sort of rubbed against the coats that were over the railings, right? But it was fine. You know, they weren't doing any harm. But I could see she was to my left, and I could see she was getting more and more annoyed at these girls. And so she leant forward and said something to one of them. Now, I don't know what she said. No idea. But then one of them turned round and gave her a total mouthful. So it was quite an unpleasant scene. And at that point, the sort of upbeat songs had ended, and George Michael at that point was singing Jesus to a Child, which was the ballad that he'd written for his partner who had died of AIDS. Actually, not all of my stories in the theatre involve people dying of AIDS, but just so happens these two do. And leaning to, they were having some sort of argument. And then my sister-in-law sat back down, and I said, well, what did you say to them? And she said, oh, I was just telling them not to rub against our coats, which was clearly not the case. And I could see she was getting more and more and more and more annoyed that these girls were stood there. And before I knew it, she'd taken a massive slug of her water, and she spat them. She spat the water over the girls. In fact, did I just reveal who it was, by the way? And she spat the water all over the girls who were stood in front, which is appalling behaviour. I mean, you don't do that. So then the girls in front were obviously absolutely furious, so they turned around, they scaled the railings, and they started to try and slap this family member of mine. So then, bearing in mind that this is a family member, I sort of waded in trying to separate them. My mother waded in and was trying to sort of break them up. So unfortunately, as George Michael was stood probably 3 meters away from us, like Davina McCall was sat behind us, David Beckham was over to our left, his mother and my sister and father were like 3 rows back. The Fufasses, chavvy family that we are all involved in a scrap, basically. We're trying to bring it up. Security have come along. They're trying to separate everyone. It is a really, really ugly and despicable scene, to be quite honest. Our George continued with his performance whilst that was going on. I mean, it's a mark of what a professional he was, frankly, that he managed to do that. So, it seems to happen a lot, or it seems to happen a lot to me, that these things happen in a theatre or a concert. I mean, in fairness, these girls shouldn't have probably come and stood where they shouldn't, but my family member, like I said, who the other family member we were with has now divorced her. So I think that was one of the final straws, to be honest, in towards the end of their marriage, after she caused a scrap at a George Michael concert. So I don't know whether you've ever got a story like that. You probably don't have a story of fighting 3 meters away from George Michael while he's singing a ballad. But if you have any stories like that, where perhaps there's been an altercation or perhaps you've had to say something, 0344 499 1000 is the number to call. You can text us as well, tweet us at Talk Radio. You can tweet me personally, Christo_radio. I've got another similar story as well at Sunset Boulevard, where someone was perhaps not very nice as well. I mean, I don't know, what is it about the theatre? Is it because you're in a live show and everyone's just a bit more tense, or they want to get the best value for money? Is it that I just seem to find myself in these situations with people who are especially stroppy? Or just have we lost our manners when it comes to these performances? You know, it's the eating as well, isn't it? I mean, like I said, I am a fat man and I like my food, but I can manage to do 2 hours without opening a bag of Maltesers during a beautiful, quiet show. So why is it that we've lost our manners in the theatre and the cinema? 0344 499 1000 is the number to call if you'd like to join the conversation here on Talk Radio.
Feel the forthright fury
across the UK, online and on DAB.
This is Talk Radio.
3 minutes past midnight. Good morning. Christo here on Talk Radio with your late show, with you till 1 o'clock. We were having a chat about Uber earlier. Should they still keep their license? Should they be able to appeal? What should be the outcome of that appeal? Also, really interesting story from the Times. And by the way, if they've come in, we'll bring you your front pages between now and 1 o'clock as well. We'll maybe do them in about 20 minutes' time, if we've got them. So we'll do that between now and the end of the programme. But we're talking about a really interesting story from the Times, and that is about in the Royal Opera House, a fight that took place over an empty seat. And when I say a fight, I mean an actual physical fight where an assault occurred. And, you know, it's ended up in a prosecution. It's a very, very ugly story where someone was hit with repeated blows. And I'm just wondering whether you have a particular gripe when it comes to the theatre, the cinema, any of those sorts of places where I think people have lost their manners a little bit, haven't they? 0344 499 1000 is the number to call. And have you ever had reason to say something to someone about it, to pull someone up about that kind of behaviour? What is your biggest gripe when it comes to the theatre and the cinema and people not respecting the place that they're in? And the other thing as well you can discuss with me if you wish to are the rules as well. Like, have you noticed as well, like, I don't know, maybe this is an EU thing, and it might be the one EU law that makes me a leaver. And that is this ridiculous idea of health and safety, that you can't bring a drink into an auditorium. I went to a pantomime last night, Cinderella, which is at the Trafalgar Studios in London, right? Drag Queen Cinderella. I mean, there is... Oh, yeah, I know, it's good. It's really good. Drag Queen Cinderella with Bag of Chips. I don't know if you watched, I don't know if you watched Drag Race. Yeah, Bagger was the, so there was Cinderella, there were the Ugly Sisters, there were two drag queen Ugly Sisters, obviously, and then she was like the mama of the House of Bagger, and Cinderella was her adopted daughter. It was brilliant, and she obviously did the much better and all of that. If you didn't watch Drag Queen, you're going to have absolutely zero idea what I was talking about there. But I went to this last night. And so, you know, it is a room full of gays and drag queens, right? You know, it is. Amanda Holden was there. Everyone wanted a drink. Everyone just wanted to have a drink. And so you have your glass of wine beforehand. And then what do you do when you get into the auditorium? You've got to put it into a plastic glass. Not only a plastic glass, but one of those horrible, flimsy, wibbly-wobbly plastic glasses. Now, I don't know about you, but that takes all the enjoyment out of my vodka and tonic when I have that. So, I mean, isn't that a ridiculous rule? I mean, they were drinking bottles of booze on the stage and falling about the place, but no, I have to have my vodka and tonic in a horrible plastic cup. Well, actually, the worst one for that, when I was a young showbiz reporter, young whippersnapper, that I used to be, going to all the events and all of the press nights and all of that, I was invited to Live Earth. Now, do you remember Live Earth? They did Live 8, which was about trying to get the G8 nations to cancel debt, right? And then I went to Live Earth, which was the follow-up. And Madonna was performing and all of these big names. It was in Wembley Stadium. And it was about trying to get all of the big world leaders on board with trying to solve climate change. Very, very worthy cause, right? And during this, you had all these videos that were being shown in between each act, which were, you know, telling us that food consumption was one of the biggest problems on the planet because we're eating too much food and we're wasting loads and we're producing food that we don't need and all the carbon emissions around that. And then we watched videos about, you know, the carbon footprint of aircraft and all of these things and how terrible it is that we're flying everywhere and emissions and cars and how we're ruining the world. Then we watch one about plastic and single-use plastic being the worst thing in the world and how terrible it is and dreadful it is and awful it is. That's all well and good, right? But then I went to buy a drink and my drink came in a plastic bottle And they went to go back into the stadium and they said, oh, sorry, we've got to take your drink out of the plastic bottle. And I said, okay, well, what are you going to do with it? And they said, we're going to put it into a plastic cup. And I said, but I've just watched a video about reducing my plastic consumption at this very concert. Now you're taking my plastic bottle of booze and you're putting it into a plastic cup that is completely unnecessary. Which is yes, is the answer to that. I mean, barking mad. Then I went to get some food. And you know what Wembley Stadium is like. I mean, I swear to God, if the earth never needed an enema, then Wembley Stadium would be the point of entry. Because Wembley Stadium is a dump. A proper, horrible, awful, grim dump of a place. Horrible, horrible place. Why any artist or any concert would ever be held at Wembley Stadium. Seriously, if you hate your fans, hold a concert at Wembley Stadium, because it's awful, absolutely awful, grim place with terrible fast food outlets, greasy, horrible food, booze that they only sell certain drinks at certain times. Do you know, if you go to Wembley Stadium and try to buy a drink, you can only buy two at a time. So if you're doing a round of drinks, you can't actually do it. Everyone's got to miss the concert to come and get a drink, or at least half the party if you're buying drinks for more than two people. So completely defeats the object of doing a round of drinks. Awful place. And so I thought I'd get some food at this Live Earth concert where I just watched a video about the consumption of the Earth's resources and how we're all eating too much food and wasting it. And I said, oh, I'm just drinking at the moment. Can I just get some chips? And they said, we can't have chips. You can have lasagna and chips, and you can have fish and chips, and you can have burger and chips. And I said, but I don't want a burger and chips. I don't want a lasagna and chips. I don't want a fish. I just want chips. No, you can't buy chips. Can't just have chips. I said, but that's a waste. So you've just shown me a video about a waste of food, and now you're going to sell me food I don't want. And then you've just shown me a video about a waste of plastic, and you're going to take my plastic drink and put it in a plastic cup. Ridiculous. Ridiculous. So those are the sorts of rules and regulations in these places, which are outrageous and ridiculous. So I'm happy to talk about them as well. 0344 499 1000. This is a really great text that's come in this evening. You can text us, by the way, by texting the word talk and your message to 87222. That'll cost you about 25p plus your standard network rate. I think it might have been Frank Skinner who was performing in a theatre, and during his stand-up, I don't know who this is from, you need to put your name on the text. During his stand-up, a couple in one of the private boxes were having sex, which after a while became quite obvious to those nearby due to the sounds they were making. I mean, the only person that would have appreciated that would have been Frank Skinner, because he'd have thought, oh my God, they're loving my show. Oh my God, they're enjoying it so much. It's such a brilliant show. A great show this must be. No. That's wrong, doing that in the theatre. Really, really wrong. Isn't there a movie where they do that, actually? Like, where is the movie? Is it 50 Shades of Grey, where they do it in a theatre during the opera? I've not watched that whole film either, because it's not my cup of tea. I find erotic films like that really fake. Is it not? Well, that's the point. Yeah, it isn't erotic. I mean, that's the whole point. It's supposed to be, but the fact it's supposed to be makes it really not erotic in the slightest. Like, it just is so fake and not real and, yeah, utterly rubbish, really. 0344 499 1000 is the number to call. John says, if it were up to me, I'd ban Uber from operating anywhere in the UK. Their drivers are sketchy rip-off merchants. Once tried to charge me and a friend £150 home from Manchester, which was about 35 miles. Well, Uber say that they're doing an awful lot to sort that out, and they've made great strides in making things better. But I have to say, another experience I've had with Uber is I left my wallet in an Uber once, and trying to get in touch with the driver to get my wallet back was an absolute nightmare. And unfortunately, my house keys were in it, which made it even worse. And, you know, the whole point was it was supposed to be far easier to facilitate that happening with the app and getting in touch with the driver. And I realized literally seconds after we'd driven away, I never saw that wallet again, ever in my life. Catherine says, oh, you've not heard me on the radio for a while. Hi, Catherine. Yeah, I am here. I'm usually here at weekends, actually. Remember the old slot I used to do on the very downmarket radio station, which we don't mention anymore? Well, it's the one after that, 5 to 7 in the morning. And I'm here as well today. I'm here tomorrow. And then I'm doing Mike, or his show. no other way do I mean that. Well, we ask Mike, really. 10 o'clock next week as well. So I'm here every day doing that. So welcome, and thank you very much indeed for your company. Indeed, thank you to anyone who's here this morning here on Talk Radio. We'll have a few tweets as well coming in as well on this. And if you wish to do so, Christo_radio. That's the way to tweet me personally. Or indeed, you can tweet the station at Talk Radio. Coming up, we'll do the front pages of all the new newspapers coming in this morning. Some very, very interesting headlines and a very, very interesting journalism, as well as the Daily Express, which is just, well, it's just the Tory press release on the front page every day, isn't it, really? There is no even a semblance of journalism there anymore. But the rest of them are absolutely brilliant. And of course, we will bring you those this morning. I'm here with you until 1 o'clock, and then Daryl Morris takes over. We've been talking this morning about Uber and about whether they should have their license renewed. They are appealing this at the moment. They actually lodged, well, they lodged it a couple of days ago at Westminster Magistrates Court. So that's something that we've been discussing this morning. And we've also been discussing the horrific altercation that took place between a lawyer and a hedge fund director, and also the Oxford-educated solicitor and barrister, as well as a fashion designer. So it sounds like a very, very ugly fight that took place in the Royal Opera House. And so we've been discussing this morning whether you've ever found yourself in a situation where you've had to pull up someone on their behaviour in the theatre, or whether you've ever actually had a row yourself in the theatre. I'll tell you what, I went to see once, done it in the cinema as well. You know, it always surprises me that popcorn is so popular in the cinema, because it's like the loudest thing you could possibly eat. And if you eat one that hasn't popped properly as well, it's even louder. Why would you have that as the food that you eat in the cinema? Very odd. But I was once watching, again, back in the days, being a showbiz reporter, I mean, that's my excuse anyway, I used to have to go and watch all these movies when they came out. And do you remember Sex and the City, the movie? And everyone was so excited that Sex and the City was coming out. And I knew I had to watch it for work. And I used to do a show on a Saturday that was about showbiz. So, and you know, when it's a really big movie like that, they do like midnight screenings. So they're doing it for Star Wars. I think this week, actually, they're doing it for Star Wars. For the new one that's coming out, they're doing like midnight screenings of that. And they're doing 3 a.m. screenings, so people can get it immediately. So I went to a midnight screening of Sex and the City, the movie, right? If you've ever been to a midnight screening, or if you've never been to one at all, just never, ever go to one, because they are like hell on earth. Because I went sober, with my notepad, ready to do a review so I could talk about it on the radio the next day. Oh, my word. It was like Alcoholics Anonymous in there. People were bringing in bottles of gin, bottles of vodka. They were absolutely hammered, to the point where everyone was talking, chatting away, singing, all of these sorts of things. And I was actually about the only one in there wanting to watch the movie. To the point where, at one point, I swear, all the lights are out, the movie is on, and a group of girls and gays in front of me, one of them got up and decided to take a photo of them all with the flash of them all in the Sex and the City film. Like, we want to save this moment. Like, there's a movie happening. Like, we're in a theatre. So I won't lie, that photograph that they've got of Sex and the City, the movie, and that beautiful experience that they all had, they will have a fat man in the row behind them with a tub of popcorn on his lap doing a very, very rude hand gesture in the rear of their photograph, which I'll have forever, because I was so angry. Who does flash photography in a cinema? Unbelievable, really. 03444991000 if you want to share your story, and indeed we'll be sharing the stories with you that you'll be finding on the front pages. We'll be bringing you those in the next 20 minutes. We'll also talk to Daryl, find out what's coming up on his programme. All of that and more. It's me, Christo, with The Late Show here on Talk Radio.
No nonsense, no prisoners, no substitutes.
This is Talk Radio.
Morning, 20 minutes to 1 o'clock. I'm here tomorrow morning as well, well, tomorrow night. Well, tonight, 10 o'clock. It's really difficult when you do a show that goes from last night to first thing in the morning, isn't it? So make sure you join me then. And what we're going to bring you now, as well as your stories of when the theatre and cinema has been, well, a place of battle rather than a place of enjoyment for you. This is after we've been discussing the horrific and rather sordid and miserable fight that took place in the Royal Opera House over an empty seat. £1,200 is how much it costs for a seat in the front row of the Royal Opera House for this particular performance. And you might think the money being spent on it would have added just a tiny bit of class. You'd have been very, very wrong, because unfortunately it resulted in a huge fight, a conviction, and that's a story that's been reported in the Times newspaper. So we've been discussing this morning when you've ever been in a situation where you've had to pull someone up on their behaviour, and the etiquette of the theatre and cinema that we've managed to lose. You know, why do people talk during these performances? Why do they rustle their packets of things? Why can't people just, you know what, I would ban food from the theatre and cinema if it was down to me. I mean, nachos. Who decides I'm going to have my evening meal in the dark whilst watching a movie? And not only that, it's going to be a meal that you really need to be able to see what you're eating, because you're scooping stuff onto a tiny triangular piece of corn. Ridiculous. So if you want to share your story on that one, 03444991000. Let's let you get up to date with the front pages you are waking up to this morning. We will start with the Times newspaper. They are going with Johnson takes tough new line on Brexit trade talks. This is Boris Johnson, who's going to redraw his Brexit bill this week to make it illegal for Parliament to extend the transition period, a move that will put him in direct conflict with Brussels. In one of his first acts since his election, the emboldened Prime Minister will also drop concessions that he made to Remainers in the last Parliament on areas including workers' rights. Yay! Sure, lots of people will be absolutely thrilled about that. By the way, though, having said that, I still firmly believe that Boris is going to stab all the Brexiters in the back, and that this is all just absolute lip service so that he can do the softest Brexit going. Because he doesn't need to do a hard Brexit now. He can get the numbers from Parliament so that he can absolutely ignore all of those barking mad Brexiters like Marc Francois, whose face is literally resembling a blueberry more and more on a daily basis. Andrew Bridgen, all of those sort of mad Brextremists, Jacob Rees-Mogg, who I think has been kept in a cupboard for the last few weeks because no one's seen him. All of those people will just be ignored. He'll stab them in the back because Boris is all about Boris. Rees-Mogg will, where will he be shipped to? Well, probably to Dublin, where he moved the head office of some of his companies so that therefore he can, Dublin in 1890, yeah. Because of course Dublin was where he moved the head office to some of his companies because he wanted free and unfettered access to the single market. Because he knows financially that makes better sense while selling a poisonous ideology of leaving the EU to everyone else. Sorry, am I allowed to still say that now that Ramona's lost the election? Probably not. Anyway, that's what the Times is reporting. They're also, which is good news for business as well, saying that shares are enjoying their best day for 3 years as investors hail Tory victory. This is British stocks enjoying their best day in more than 3 years yesterday as investors hailed the certainty provided by last week's general election result. Well, markets always like a bit of certainty, don't they? And so that's what the front page of the Times is looking like today. Moving on to the Daily Mirror. Celebs jet 10 foot from drone disaster. This is a luxury private jet used by royals and celebrities that came within 10 feet of smashing into an illegal drone. So just to stress, there was no celebrity on board at that point, and we don't know what celebrities actually use the jet, but apparently it came within 10 feet of a drone. So there we go. Not sure that's the most riveting story on the front page of the Daily Mirror this morning. The Guardian. Long Bailey gets clear run as candidate of Labour left. This is the Shadow Education Secretary, Angela Rayner, has cleared the way for her friend, Rebecca Long Bailey, to run as the left-wing successor to Jeremy Corbyn. Yes, because that's going to save Labour, isn't it? Becoming more socialist. I mean, it's really, really brilliant strategy from them, isn't it? It's just... I mean, is it just me? But I just don't understand. Of course... why do they possibly think that becoming more socialist is going to sort things out for them? Like, why do they possibly think that more of the same is going to win? I mean, do you think that they're just going to keep with the same manifesto until everyone's so sick of the Tories they'll just vote for anything? Like, I don't understand. Like, it is not socialism that people want. People want, if they want an alternative to the Tories, it will be probably someone like Blair. Now, I know Blair is a swear word when it comes to people who love Labour, but the ideological position of Blair, I know in practice he took us into an illegal war and was just so duplicitous, I wouldn't be surprised if we found out his name was Tina and he lived in Bromley, but his ideology, as in being more centre-right or centre-left rather than actually, you know, somewhere so far left you're in blooming goodness knows where, that was a sound ideology. That was an ideology that won three elections. Jeremy Corbyn and socialism has just got the worst result than 1983. Now, do you remember Thatcher with the C2 voters? And that became Mondeo Man. And then this election became Workington Man. Well, all of that is the traditional, probably, Labour voter. But in this election, and in countless others, the Tories have managed to nab them from Labour. It was almost an open goal. And if they don't realise that high taxation and penalising ambition is not the way forward, they will never get elected again. What are they doing, these stupid interviews saying that no one needs to be a billionaire? Well, of course no one needs to be a billionaire, but it's people's desires to be a billionaire that means that lots and lots and lots of jobs are created and lots and lots of prosperity and taxes paid throughout the country. You don't penalise those people who become billionaires. And also, that person who's become a billionaire through hard work has probably taken a big loan, mortgaged their house, worked exceptionally long hours in order to make that company a success. They are the ones that deserve the reward. You don't penalise them. It's unbelievable, really. So that is what The Guardian is saying today. Let's move on to some of the other newspapers you're waking up to this morning. Christmas miracle. I'm not perfect after all. This is Gary Lineker, who apparently accidentally named the sports personality of the year. I mean, that's always been a contradiction in terms, hasn't it? The sports personality of the year. I mean, I thought the criteria for being in sport is that you have no personality whatsoever. Oh, other than if you're Tyson Fury and you can literally get nominated for being sexist and homophobic and still get a pat on the back. Great. Do you remember when the BBC put out a statement when there was the huge petition saying that, you know, why has Tyson Fury been nominated for Sports Personality of the Year? And you know what their statement was? Oh, unfortunately, his personality has nothing to do with the nomination. That was what they said. Yeah. So the Sports Personality of the Year is not based on personality, apparently. Yeah, thanks, BBC. Or you just bludgeon us on the head repeatedly and expect us to be that stupid. Daily Express. Boris to defy EU over Brexit deadline. I mean, what has happened to the Daily Express? There is just not even a hint of journalism there anymore, is there? Not even a little whisper of it. Meanwhile, the Daily Mail. Welby. Now, this is the Archbishop of Canterbury has said, don't expect royals to be saints. After the Prince Andrew scandal, Archbishop makes extraordinary intervention. It is wrong to expect to behave like superhuman saints, the Archbishop of Canterbury has said of the royals. He spoke out after Prince Andrew and the scandal there and appeared to defend him by insisting everybody is human. His remarks come amid the continuing backlash over Andrew's previous links to a convicted paedophile. When asked about the Duke of York and whether the royal family must adhere to a higher moral code, the Archbishop said, I think, generally speaking, they do serve in a way that is extraordinary, in what is literally for them a life sentence. And then went on to say that I don't think they should be superhuman saints. No, we don't want superhuman saints, Justin. We just want people that don't hang out with convicted paedophiles. I mean, the bar isn't that high, Justin. The bar is quite low. Just don't hang out with a pedo. You know, I don't think that's much to ask. Do you think so? And always know the timetable of your life in respect to Pizza Express in Woking. That's the other thing we expect. Oh, and don't expect to sweat. I mean, did you see TripAdvisor and all of the reviews of Pizza Express in Woking after that? I mean, they were brilliant. They're like, I remember being in there a few years ago and the air conditioning broke, but there was a guy in the corner and he was so cool. No sweat at all. It's so wrong. Do you know, I'd scrap them all. The only ones I'd keep are the Queen and the direct descendants. The rest of them, I mean, Andrew and what are their names? Beatrice and Eugenie. I mean, they seem nice, but there's not much going on upstairs. I mean, that is the problem. That is the problem, isn't it? Because they don't need to think for themselves, and they're just not very bright. I'm not talking about Beatrice's new genie particularly. I'm talking about all the royals. They're just not very bright. The only one is the Queen. Phenomenal, fantastic, just absolutely wonderful in her service. But the rest of them, just go away. Honestly. I mean, if Prince Andrew doesn't realise that hanging around with a pedo is a bad idea, then, I mean, how sick do you have to be? And then giving an interview where he doesn't mention the victims once. Oh, God, it doesn't bear thinking about, does it? I mean, we've dissected that interview. I'm really interested to know about the Queen's speech, though, and what the hell she's going to say about this year. Do you think she's having another Annus Horribilis? Because it probably would be, wouldn't it? The Sun? They've gone for the Santa chores, and this is the lotto-winning builder, Steve Thompson, and he's turned Santa after his £105 million lottery windfall, and he's therefore going on to do customers' jobs for free, which, by the way, sounds wonderful. Yeah, I got one of those emails yesterday. Oh, it's so annoying, isn't it? Why don't they just tell you when you've got a lottery windfall and tell you the amount? You know, oh, there's a brilliant and interesting news about your Euro Millions ticket. Yeah, I've won £2.60. Like, don't send me that email because I always think it's the jackpot. And also amazing photos of Vanessa Feltz. I've never felt so sexy, she says. And she's looking absolutely great. The Wrath of Khan is what they've gone for on the front page of The Eye. London mayor joins Labour inquest with criticism of ludicrous leadership explanation for election defeat. Labour did not put a forward credible candidate. Corbyn allies blame Brexit as leadership race takes off. Well, Sadiq Khan, you're not much better. I mean, I swear to God, you'd tax our oxygen if it was available. Telegraph, Johnson to enshrine 2020 Brexit in law. That's what they've gone for. We've even got the Metro here as well, which has gone for the Eccleston £50 million gems theft. So that's what you're finding on your front pages. And no doubt those front pages will make an appearance in the next programme, because I am here with you, boo-hoo, just until 1 o'clock. And then much hilarity, delight and happiness, because Daryl Morris takes over.
Hilarity, no. No.
Never been described
misery.
As. Yeah, misery, regret.
Sadness, regret,
yeah,
bitterness.
Absolutely. All of that.
Alcoholism.
You can stay if you like.
I could. I mean, in fairness, I mean, I've got enough to say. I probably could do enough
before.
I probably could.
Do it.
But I think they probably had enough of me tonight. By the judging of the texts, I really think they have. Oh, by the way, Jenny says, can I read you Jenny's text?
Yeah, please.
You can tell me what you
please
think. The reason cinema, because I've been talking about how annoying it is.
Yeah, I heard, yeah.
People having scraps in theatres and cinemas, and the unfortunate incident of when I fought in front of George Michael, which was not very becoming, as he was singing an anthem to his dead lover. The reason cinemas have become feed-your-face cells is because the go-to for anyone with such poor hygiene and table manners, they can't risk being seen eating in public. But they don't seem to understand they can be heard loudly. Why would
that's
you eat nachos
point.
In a cinema?
I went to, that's a really good point, they stink as well, don't they? I went to watch Mary Poppins a couple of weeks ago on the West End. An incredible production.
I'm so jealous.
Yeah, it was really, really good. No, I went to just, I paid. I know, can you believe it?
I don't understand.
No, I'm not quite there yet. I don't think, what, you handed over money?
I'm
not quite there yet on the sort of social ladder.
Just came up in the back of my throat. It's disgusting. I've seen that show previously and it made me cry. My eyes out. I was so blown away by it.
So there's a really, there's an incredibly powerful bit where she, and I don't want to spoil it for you, but Mary Poppins,
pretty well known.
When
she goes, when they say goodbye.
Yeah, she flies off, right? And she flies off and she flies over the crowd and she's kind of harnessed up.
Which is amazing.
It looks stunning. It is, it is also the crescendo of this incredibly emotive moment. Some woman, a couple of rows in front, whips a phone out, does what you know that you can't do in one of these big Western shows. Starts taking photos. Right, so what happens then is, so that in itself is disruptive, but what happens then is one of the ushers, understandably and rightly, comes along to the end of the row and starts flashing the torch to stop her to do it. Stop her doing it, right? Starts flashing the torch. So the rest of us, at this beautiful moment
in
Mary Poppins,
behind the torch.
We're blinded by this torch.
Did anyone say anything to her?
Well, a couple of people sort of poked and prodded her and her husband had a go. But what happened at the end, what happened afterwards, which was really interesting, was the usher came over and demanded that she delete the pictures, and she watched her do it, and then she said, okay, and now from your deleted items folder, and she watched her go into the deleted items folder and delete the pictures, which I thought was great.
No, that is true, but that's so annoying.
Isn't it?
Oh, people nowadays, this is why I just hate sharing the world with anyone.
Anyway,
what have you got coming? And I can't believe you didn't take me to see Mary Poppins with you, by the way, Daryl.
Next
thank
time.
That is noted.
Next time,
Christo. What have you got on your programme?
Lots coming up. Huge amount of things coming up, actually. We're going to be joined by Richard Blanco shortly to chew the fat. He's a TV presenter and property expert who's going to take us through some of the stories that he's had his eye on.
Nice.
Lots of fallout, lots of sort of Labour chat. I think this is probably where the attention is. Bit of Nicky Morgan as well talk about.
It's an interesting story with her. Story.
Yeah, we've got an interesting take on that, actually, after 1 o'clock.
I want to be a life peer for turning up and having a gossip and
right.
Going, actually, I'll kind of do that here.
Basically the job, isn't it?
It is. Basically
the job. We're also going to be in heading to Latin America as well. Lots to get into with John Bonfiglio. A big story yesterday, the British businessman killed in Argentina. To talk about, we're going through our moments of the decade. Broadcaster Connor Phillips is going to do that with us a little bit later on. And we're going to talk about doppelgangers, right? Because Greta Thunberg's doppelganger was spotted recently. Did you actually, if you saw this
no,
or not?
No, I didn't see that story.
From the 18th century, a picture of this girl who looks absolute spits of Greta Thunberg. So we're going to speak to somebody who's written a paper about doppelgangers, because there's so many myths attached to them and so many different theories as to why doppelgangers exist and what happens if you meet them.
That would be if Greta Thunberg had a modern day doppelganger and I was that person, I would take expensive commission flights.
Oh.
I would drive everywhere. I would make my life a living hell. thank you, Daryl Morris.
Thank
coming
you.
Up next. And then that's just about it from me. I'm going to be back tomorrow, well, I should say tonight, from 10 o'clock with your late show. So we'll be talking about all of the big stories of the day. Might do a bit of that Labour tonight, if you can actually bear it. But, I mean, it might have been done to death by then, much like their manifesto, to be honest. So we'll be talking about that and much, much more. Of course, you can go to our website, talkradio.co.uk, where you can listen back to many of our programmes and, of course, see our entire schedule. Don't go anywhere, because coming up next here on Talk Radio with a full review of the papers and all of the stories that you've just been hearing about, it is Daryl Morris. That's all next here on Talk Radio.
We are Talk Radio.